program for Latin Agrarian Studies at UWC, which will do a commentary of the report itself, and from there we'll do questions and comments. But before I do so, we've got a few apologies. Honorable Gemma, Honorable Thompson, and Honorable Singh. And Honorable Abraham may leave us midstream. Because he's got a meeting with the Portfolio Committee on Intelligence. The spending committee, I don't know.
Whatever that is. SPI, don't spend it for me.
Yes. Yeah. The second thing is that you'll recall that this is the second appearance of the delegation from the Department of Land Affairs. As a consequence, of the problems we had in the previous appearance, and last week we did brief members that in my conversation with the minister, we established a view that she will be part of the delegation by Land Affairs today. And address the portfolio committee about developments around the former DG. So, the minister is in attending cabinet today. She will join us towards the end of the program. So that takes care of that housekeeping matter. So as I say, as a consequence of that, we've got acting DG, Mr. Tuzi Kwanya, who is the leader of the delegation. I don't know whether I should welcome you, but this is your home.
In Hollywood.
Yeah, it's in Hollywood. Thank you, I'm about giving me an offer. So, without much ado, maybe some of your delegation don't know me, so I'll have to do that. As I normally say, that in our previous past, in Africa, if you go on an international trip and the first president, when you come back, somebody has taken over. So, we've got a little person like me, Ruben Oshalo. So, without much ado,
thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me introduce my colleagues. I've got Deputy Director General Nduduzi Shabane on my left. Next to is the Land Claims Commissioner for Gauteng and Northwest, Dumi Sibuka. K.C. Masisi, the acting CFO for the Department of Land Affairs. And to my right is the acting DPC for Corporate Services, Anton van Staden. And at my back, I've got Dr. Derek Clark, who is coming from the Surface and Mapping Unit. They are, both of them are representing the LPI branch of the department. Dr. Mahal Mela could not be here. So next to him is Casey Filet, who is in the DEED office. So that is the delegation. If I go straight to the report, the department is contributing to the objectives of ASCESA, and the contribution is in the area of poverty alleviation and economic development. That as we are focused on land redistribution, we should actually ensure that it is improving the quality of life of the people, the livelihoods, and creating economic opportunities as we do that. So this is what we are trying to do in the work that we are doing. I'm not going to go through the core objectives of the department because you are aware of the committee, but I'll go straight to the operational performance, which is the purpose of this presentation today. In terms of operational performance, we've got seven programs in the department, as you may have seen in the report. In terms of program one, we are dealing with administration and human resource management. One of the things that we have done this year was to look at the organizational structure. I think you have heard that the department has got capacity constraints, capacity problems in terms of staffing. We have finalized the organogram, the departmental organizational structure. This year it has been signed off by the minister and we have sent it to the Department of Public Service Administration, DPSA, which is the normal procedure when you are reviewing the structure, particularly for the levels of senior management from director, level of director upwards. We must get the concurrence and support of DPSA. So we believe that this is going to address this issue of capacity, which has been a challenge at the level of service delivery, particularly for the posts that relate to the implementation of programs at the field level, the planners that have to go out. We have one of the issues that we had to do was the issue of the citizens' charter to address issues of what is the satisfaction of the people about the services that we are delivering. So we have finalized that citizens' charter. And the other area is that of service delivery improvement plan that has been developed and approved and submitted to DPSA in the manner in which we must improve on our service delivery. Then the issue of the provision of skills. We have developed the skills development framework and we have entered into a memorandum of understanding with the University of Porto that they can design and implement a training program that is going to talk to the actual creation of skills and capacity with our people who are implementing our programs. We've got a partnership training program for land reform beneficiaries that will be sent to the university for this training. We've got 250 bursaries that we have approved under which program 90 bursaries have been awarded to students. If you look at the issue of the vacancy rate, the vacancy rate in the department is 27.341, and we have indicated program by program what that vacant space represents. If you look at the next slide, you will see that we have about 1,045 posts that were vacant in this year under review, which we had to deal with. And we have appointed, in other words, advertised and appointed 454 people that come from outside, but those that have been appointed from within, applicants from within the department, which we capture here as promotion, 396 people. And those 396 mean that we have appointed people, but but through their appointment, they have created new posts where they left. In other words, if you you had a senior planner position, you advertised, you didn't get people from outside, you got your planner who applied and became successful, then that created posts at the level of the planner. So that is what has happened. And then if you look at what we have done in terms of appointment, we have appointed 850 people out of the 1045 people that were vacant posts. The issue of people who are getting jobs in other government departments has been a serious issue. Where people go for other positions within the government, we have recorded about 199 people that have done that. 9 retirements, 13 deaths, and 201 resignations. The point of this slide is that out of the 1045 people, we have appointed 850, but we ended up with a vacancy, a number of vacant posts at 1020, which means actually it's a bottomless pit, or it's a leaking bucket. You're filling water and it doesn't get full. So that's the challenge of around this capacity building. We have upped our recruitment process, and we have even tried to re-engineer the manner in which we do the recruitment by even looking at outsourcing our recruitment to make sure that we can have a shorter turnaround. It may have been taking about 3 to 6 months to fill a post after one has left. You advertise, you get the shortlisting, the interviews. We are trying to shorten that period. And this initiative is also assist us to do that. We're implementing the intensive program. I've talked about the bursary scheme, particularly for geomatic surveys and cartography and town planning. We are getting diplomas to build that capacity. We've got an interesting graduate program. That graduate program, we have decided to recruit about 450 graduates, 450 unemployed graduates who we give four-year contracts within the department. This is precisely because we are struggling to get people with experience to be appointed. So this program is going to ensure that we grow our own fees. Over a 4 period, people shall have developed enough knowledge about our programs. So this is a step up from just the intention program, and we think that this is going to assist us. The issue of the policy unit in the Office of the Director General, we have had capacity constraints at that level, and in fact, this is why this has delayed, for example, the implementation of the recommendations of the LEM summit, which was held in October 2005. There have been capacity constraints in that we do not have enough people. We only have about 2 people in that unit, when in fact we should be having about 7 professionals, highly qualified professionals who can assist us in terms of developing appropriate policy documents that would respond to all of those land permit recommendations. So we need to push the capacity in this area. In fact, in the new structure that we've got, this is where we are going to build that capacity. We would like to have the capacity to be able to interact with policy development. With that little capacity that we've got, we have developed the foreign ownership of land. The report has been circulated. I hope you do have a copy of that report. What is critical for us in this area is that the report has established what it did, but for us it means that we need to refine a policy and that will talk to the issues of what procedures will be there if we are going to deal with the foreign ownership of land. What are the do's and don'ts? What will be the regulations? Because what cabinet instructed us was that we must have ownership of land by foreigners regulated in this country, just like in many other countries in America, in Europe, and in Asia. So South Africa must not be left behind. They must be able to regulate. So to do this, we think that we need that capacity within the department, which capacity we do not have at the moment. We have to use a panel of experts for this particular one, and we have consulted with National Treasury and DTI around the issues of land tax, which were one of the recommendations of the land summit. We are reviewing the willing buyer, willing seller. We've got documents, a policy discussion document around that. We are interacting with the Department of Public Works. They have done the first draft of the expropriation bill, reviewing the 1975 Expropriation Act. There are still critical issues that we need to look at that. We have, on the post-segment support, we felt that it is very important to talk to issues of post-segment support. We have delivered 4 million hectares so far. But I think we as a nation need to look at this. What are we doing with those 4 million hectares? We have recorded a high failure rate with those projects. That 4 million hectares, we have done a review of LRAC projects using service providers who helped us with that review. We have also done a restitution, the review of the restitution project using CORE, the researchers, and NGO. And those two reports are just telling us that we do have a high failure rate in terms of the land transfer. And our view is that we need to do something as a nation around this. The support, the level of support that goes to these people in terms of the restitution, we are providing grants. We call them restitution discretionary grants. We call them settlement planning grants. They help claimants to go back to the land. But we have also a policy, Section 42D, 42E, 42C of the Restitution Act is talking about a subsidy that we can give which can support development. We have a policy that says we will provide 25% of the land cost to those restitution beneficiaries so that they can start with projects. This support is not adequate because you need technical support. This is why we've got this CAS, Comprehensive Agricultural Support Program, so that it can actually assist the land reform beneficiaries, not just restitution beneficiaries. But our own assessment is that the implementation of the CAS program needs to be reviewed because it is not adequate. It is not adequate support. I think we need more support, the hand-holding for those restitution and land reform beneficiaries. We need the hand-holding support given to those who have left from beneficiaries. Coming to so we are, I will circulate a booklet that we have developed around this post settlement support, which is part of the policy unit discussion by the policy unit on how we can actually assist in terms of post settlement support. Coming to program two, surveys and mapping, we do have unit which is called surveys and mapping. It renders professional and technical support to client services. And the focus for this year under review was to improve the efficiency and the turnaround times in the manner in which we provide those professional services. And to this end, we think that we have achieved in that regard. To also contribute to the realization of the African agenda with the development of projects for Nepal, encouraging mapping Africa for Africa and African reference framework. We think that we have made significant progress in achieving towards that specific target. In terms of integrated special reference framework, we have made available the National Control Survey System, which our view is that we have actually overachieved in that regard. Our performance was good. In terms of maps and other geospatial information, we had a target to produce 15-20 maps, and we think we have made significant inroads in that regard. We also have the cadastral survey, whose focus is cadastral special information. In that regard, we have achieved the cadastral information system, which was enhanced to increase the efficiency in service delivery, both for the general public and for the various stakeholders. And the support to restitution and land reform. This is going to be important, particularly when we talk to the implementation of CLARA. In terms of Program 6, which is also part of this branch, that special information unit is focusing on the quantitative and scientific study on the settlement growth patterns in our country. If you recall, the special planning of apartheid has pushed our people far away from their work centers. So this unit is looking at what are the best ways, in fact, interacting with various departments, including the president, on the national special development framework. So they are participating in that. They are also working closely with provincial development tribunals and the South African Council of Planners in respect of land use, so that they can they are better equipped to deliver. But even within this area, we still have serious weaknesses. The weaknesses are that we cannot recruit skilled staff for all of these units of our land and planning information branch. We can't get enough surveyors. We can't get enough people who are qualified in this area. So there are capacity constraints. But as I said earlier, the approved structure provides for the creation of posts that are going to actually bring our capacity in this particular field. On Program 7, which is the deed registration information, we have found that there are capacity constraints and also the issues of the distance to the clientele. The deed offices were located in line with the old maps. They are in Cape Town, Pietermaritzburg, Johannesburg, Pretoria, in line with the old maps. And what we are saying is that they need to be aligned with the new map, which talks to the nine provinces. We have opened an office in Nelspruit, for the day profit. In fact, for the other brothers and mentoring and others, we're trying to see that we can establish those offices in the various provinces so that it's easier to get to those offices by those provinces. Because we're influenced by the volume of work that is there in those provinces in terms of the new housing development and all of those issues. So we are going to be establishing the offices, these offices in Polokwane and Limpopo, and we are considering the other provinces as well. We want to have a transformed cadastre, which is user-friendly, which provides for the introduction of the e-cadastre. At the moment, we are all on manual, and we would like to introduce the electronic approach to this function. It's taken a long time. We've talked about this for the past 2 years, but we just can't get around it. We have tried to consult with SAS to see how they have done it, because this is what they have done, and they have recorded good success. So we're trying to look at this. We've got a service provider that is on board who is advising us on how best to approach this, to achieve this key cadastre. Concerning restitution, we have settled for this year under review 74,417 claims out of the 79,696 claims, because that figure has increased by the end of September to 74,500. You will recall that 80% of the claims lost were urban, so most of those urban claims have been settled, and 20% of the claims were rural. Now, the rural claims that are outstanding are 5,000. They have a big challenge around them. The challenge is the issue of those that are going to the land claims court, because there are different or disputes around the validity of the claim, mainly in all of the provinces. And then the issues of disputes in the community are around boundaries, disputes that relate who is the rightful chief for that community, or the chief wanting the land to be registered in his own name as the chief and not in the name of the community. Sometimes the issue of the land use, whether this land should continue to be used as a sugar estate or as a forestry land, or change use to livestock, and all of those are impact on the settlement of the land claims. Those are the issues we have said reported to this committee, and we have reported to our political principals that these 5,000 claims, we are doing our best to settle these claims, but with these challenges that I've just outlined, our own estimation as the commission is that about one third of these claims are going to be difficult or impossible to settle within this frame. But we are proud, because we are 2 to 5% of the claims that are outstanding that would not have been settled by next year. We were just in Canada on a study tour. And we found that in Canada, they take 15 years to settle one rural claim. And South Africa is taking about five years so far in terms of our records. 5 years to settle a rural claim. So we have really improved in terms of this. Our target was that we can settle a rural claim in 12 months. It's proving to be a very difficult target. But we think we can make significant progress to settle those claims. Those are the issues that relate to the outstanding claims. I think the other issue is the issue of the land uses. As I indicated earlier, in restitution alone, we have delivered almost 2 million hectares. In redistribution, we have delivered another 2 million hectares. The issue is the use of that land. And to us, it is a critical issue that we need to reflect as a nation, how best we can enable our people to use that ledge. In terms of provincial performance for this year under review and restitution, we delivered 2,772 claims, which saw 579,000 hectares distributed to all of those provinces. One of the issues is the alignment of our objectives with DLA as well as the Department of Agriculture. For that, both government supports. We need the various departments to commit to this support. We have seen a very shining example in Limpopo, where the MEC has put allocated its own resources, not only budget in terms of the 2018 million that they have earmarked for giving to restitution beneficiaries, but also in terms of staff members. They have given the commission 20 professionals like agronomists, horticulturalists, who are supporting these restitution beneficiaries. So we feel that this alignment is very critical, and we wish that this could be replicated in other provinces. But we're discussing in the forum of the ministers and MEC how we can actually replicate this example that we've got in Limpopo. The response is different from province to province. We've got agricultural projects in restitution. We did make an evaluation of 324 of those projects, and we found that most of that land, 47%, was pure agricultural projects, and the rest was shared between forestry projects, between housing projects, between conservation projects. But what we noted was that there were 1,104 permanent jobs that were created in that exercise, and there were 2,725 temporary jobs, and there were 475 people that were sent to training in that sample of 324 projects. And we've learned lessons in that review, that there are many weaknesses, and there are many things that we may have to do in order to improve our support to those people who we are feeling less. I'm not going to get into this slide, because I've made reference to it about the challenges and weaknesses that we are experiencing in the implementation of the resolution project, and we've got strategies that we have developed around that. In terms of the land delivered to date, we have delivered 4 million hectares for both programs, which are key for land delivery. For redistribution, we have delivered 2.2 million hectares, and for restitution, we have delivered 1.8 million hectares. It totals to 4 million hectares. Now, clearly, in terms of the target that we have set for ourselves, which is this 30% by 2014, 4 million hectares out of 25 million hectares is a drop in the ocean. We need to up our delivery, but we have also been sensing, as I indicated earlier, that perhaps these targets are very high targets for the period, particularly if we are going to look to the post-settlement support issues, which may not have been thought through at the time of setting the targets, these implications that go with the land delivery, which have been actually elucidated by these two reports that I'm referring to, the ELMAS review report as well as the restitution review report. Those things are really forcing us to go back to the drawing board around the approach, the analysis that we need to do, and some of the initiatives and support systems that we need to give to the implementation of these programs. In terms of redistribution, we have delivered 258,485 against the target of 2.5 million. It goes back to the target that I talked about. If you look at this slide, it tells us that we, to 2014, we've got about 17.5 million hectares that we have to deliver just for the redistribution program alone. And that gap is quite a wide gap if you compare to what we've delivered so far. But the interesting slide is this one. Comparing our budget to our delivery. What we see there is that our budget has been increasing over the period from 2002 to this current year. The budget of the department has been of program 5, just program 5, has been increasing, but the number of hectares that has been delivered, you can look at it. The pink one shows hectares, and the blue one shows the budget allocated to program 5, redistribution program. Now, what this illustrates is that over that period, for the same amount of money that has been allocated, we are getting a lesser number of hectares. And this is true because the land prices are increasing. When we are analyzing just restitution alone, we found that most of the grazing land we used to buy at 1,000, it increased to 2,900, and our land count was that is about 3,000 rands per hectare. The latest amounts. When we compared it with the experience that we had in Lebubu, we bought orchards in Lebubu, your lychee, macadamia, your deciduous fruit farms. We bought the land at 55,000 rand per hectare. And this was also true in KZN, where we bought the land between 35,000 rand per hectare to 55,000 rand per hectare. Now, it means that the national average for restitution alone for the hectares that we delivered was around 30,000 per hectare, 65,000 per hectare. That was the national average. So it shows here in this graph that the land cost has been going higher, so we get lesser land for more money that is allocated to these programs. And this is true even with redistribution. We have just done an exercise now. It shows here, when we are focusing on the Western Cape, just to buy land in the Western Cape, the average there in the Western Cape alone was 110,000 rand per hectare. This includes the vineyards that we've got here. So the issue of the land prices is a real issue that has to be considered when we talk about the rollout of the land reform program. In restitution alone, we were working out that to finalize these 5,000 claims, you may need something between 11 and 15 billion rand. This is the revised amount based on the experience of the 10 bush claim in Mpumalanga, in the Komati Port area, where we bought land at 55,000 rand per hectare, and in the Lebubu area, where we did the same, 55,000 rand per hectare, and the sugarcane estate in the KZN area, where there are land claims, they are coming at between 35 and 55,000 rand per hectare. So, in our analysis of where these claims are, the remaining 5,000 claims, we thought that we may need about 11 billion to about 15 billion rand per hectare. Not per hectare, but for the remaining land, sorry. Yeah. In terms of the labor tenant claim cycles, we are saying that we anticipated that there would be cases that are taken to the land claims court and around labor tenants, but there were none for this period under review, which were taken to the department. We still don't know about cases which are taken directly to the magistrate's court, because the system of the evictions monitoring system we have not been on top of this for quite a long time as the department. We've talked about it, but we have not really been on top of that. Recently we have looked at all the, we've got a report that tells us how we can run an effective eviction monitoring system, which is what we are planning to do. At the moment, we are not on top of it. And we need to look at some of the ways in which we can be on top of the evictions monitoring system. We have noticed that some farm dwellers lose eviction cases in court because of poor legal representation, and of course because of the lack of transformation in the judiciary, and because of the lack of support from the from staffs in terms of some of the investigations that are happening around those. So what we've done as a department is we've looked at the use of the services of NGOs such as the Rural Legal Trust. We're talking to the Department of Justice around the manner in which we can actually cooperate to be on top of the eviction challenges that we are dealing with. We have bought some land for human settlement to address even some of the problems of farm dwellers during this period under review. Concerning the special purpose vehicles that we spoke about to you, we have consulted and we have gotten advice that it may not be the best way to go because you will have to establish a new legislation that would establish that SPV. Could be like a parastatal. We have looked at the use of organs such as the land bank, and we have, the challenges that were raised was how can you use the land bank when in fact they themselves are still going through challenges. So we had to reflect and come back with the department and together with the Department of Agriculture to look at how best can we implement this fast track, the acquisition of land, and link it to agrarian reform, so that there is support for the land that we transfer. And we are finding an approach where within the department, both Department of Agriculture and the Department of Land Affairs, we've got a program which we call Land and Agrarian Reform Program, LARP. That program is the program that we have seen as the way out that we can implement within the structure of the department, the fast tracking of land delivery. So we are withdrawing the proposal of the SPV in this committee, and we are going to be following the LARP approach, which would use the existing staff, in other words, the existing a structure of the departments, both Department of Agriculture and Department of Land Affairs. That is what we are currently debating and how we can do that support in that area. We have talked about PLAS, the implementation of PLAS, and we have seen a significant improvement when we use PLAS as an approach to not pluses in double A, but pluses in 1A. Plus is a proactive land acquisition strategy. So that strategy, we are saying that it is one alternative that can assist us to fast track land reform, never still achieve our targets. Because the limitation in the approach of using grants per households is that because of the increasing land prices, you are only able to buy land according to the number of beneficiaries that can be pulled together to make the amount that can enable you to buy the farm. And in many cases, you are not able to get this group. And it meant that you need large groups to buy one small piece of land which is also one big challenge, but this group farming is not really practical.
Situation.
Yeah, so we are saying that perhaps what we need to look at, what we need to look at is this plot can enable you to actually assist a smaller number of people to get the land and still be effective on the land. So we think that plot is going to assist us to be able to achieve that, but we still need to look at some administrative issues that may need to be addressed around that plot. But for our pilot testing of plot, it has shown that it is one approach that can assist us to achieve what we would like to achieve in the time that we've got. Around state land management, we still have some challenges. The protracted processes of the provincial state land disposal processes, it takes a long time. So the actual physical transfer of the land is not fast enough. Let me clarify something. It is important to give this explanation time and time again. The state land that we've got available for land reform is a small percentage of the land. In other words, if you talk about that 13% of the land that is held by places in communal hands, it's in these homeland areas, and is already occupied by people who are sitting on it. And secondly, the other one is the one that is held by state departments like your Lohakra in the army. So it's held by the army, and the other is held by departments of public works for public utilities, schools, hospitals, etc. So the amount of land that is available under state land, which is available for redistribution, is it's less than 1.5 million. And we have delivered about half of that land for redistribution purposes. We are left with another half. So it cannot meet the land reform requirements. We have 25 million hectares. So it is only around 2 million out of the 25 million hectares. So it will not meet all of the land reform requirements. So we still have a challenge, though, even with this small portion of the actual transfer. Coming to the financial compensation, which is the last part, financial performance, which is the last part of my presentation, we see that the budget of the commission of the department has been increasing since 2002 from 99%, where we, in other words, our expenditure on that budget has been increasing. It was 99% in 2002, 97% in 2003, 98% in 2004. We had a dip in 2005, which was 73%. You'll recall the 1 billion debate, which was the restitution money, which we could not spend because it was linked to development, and development was taking longer, and we spoke to National Treasury that this 1 billion that we could not spend in that period, we would come back to National Treasury so that they can assist us, to which they had agreed. So in the adjustment estimate, they revised our adjustment estimate and took this 1 billion aside. But now I want to report to the committee that we thought that this was last year. We thought that this year we could go and collect this money from Treasury, especially for this adjustment estimate last week. And we were given only 250 million rand for Rustersveld. And even that 250 million rand was not adequate, because Rustersveld is going to cost us as commission 303 million for direct cost alone. For direct costs for the Rustersveld, we will pay 303. But that is a big saving. It's 303 against what the claimants were claiming, which was going into close to 2 billion for all the losses from 1927 to now. And we reached an amicable agreement in court that we would settle that claim for 303 million rand, excluding the legal costs, the legal fees for that transaction. But what we have been given in this assessment estimates was 250 million. We still wanted about 1.2 billion from that as saving the previous year, and we couldn't get that, and we still need that, and we think that for this period to match, without that complementary support, we may not be having all the money that we need to finalize some of the things that are prioritized for this year. In terms of figures, these are the amounts that are there in our budget, 3.7, on which we have spent 3.72 million, billion, and it leaves us with less than 1%, which amounted to about 4.6 million that we could not spend. Had we spent this 4 million, we would have overspent, because some of the projects that we could have implemented could have taken us beyond 3.7 billion. And National Treasury and the Auditor General don't take kindly even 1 cent over the budget in our expenditure. So we have a success that unspent funds for this year. In terms of the audit, we had qualifications last year and even this last financial year. Last year we had only one qualification around the asset management, but this year we have got two qualifications for both asset management as well as the management of leases. So those are the two qualifications that we've got in our financial report here. In terms of the asset management, one of the issues that are very clear is that I must explain that generally most of the government departments are having this qualification on asset management, because government has not been running its affairs like the private sector, where they've got the balance sheet, and the balance sheet is critical for the life of the private sector. The assets of government, there was no strict control, and this is an observation of all government departments. We were proactive in the Department of Land Affairs. We tried to put all these assets in one register, and we tried to do this. And during the audit, they saw the work that we had done, and then they audited us on that work, which was not there in the previous audit. And they said that, no, from this list that you are giving us, it seems that the from the sample that we did, we don't have enough verification of the physical verification of the assets, putting the labels and all of that in those assets. The asset register did not comply with the minimum requirements of the asset management guidelines, with order numbers and recording. The root cause for this was that the intake of assets in 2003 had a number of serious flaws, precisely because in those years and years before that, there was no serious reflection on this asset register. There was no compliance with the departmental policy and procedures, and there was issues of capacity in each of the offices that relates to asset management. The interventions that we have engaged in include looking at document and classification and capturing of order numbers. We believe that from now on we should not have this disqualification for all of our assets, save for those that are historical assets where the recording has not been done. We have got a robust identification of the non-verified assets office by office, and we have in this new structure allocated capacity for doing this at the level of provinces, because we've got district offices, we've got provincial offices, and we've got the national office. So all of those offices, we are saying that we need to ensure that we've got enough capacity, staff that are going to work on it. On the second qualification, we found that there was incomplete information on all the land that is available for lease. Let me explain that there are two categories of this land. This is the land that is run by the departments. and also land that is run through the power of attorney run by the MECs in the provinces. So those types of assets, the land that is leased to those, is administered in these two offices. Now, both sets of leases were not available. There was incomplete information. Even with the power of attorney on that land that is on that lease, there was no clear implementation of agreements, and there was no transfer to the National Revenue Funds of this. There was incomplete and inaccurate information, and what we have said, we have noted, is that there was lack of approved policies to govern the relationship between the revenue collected and the provinces. The lack of debtors management. You need something like a debtors collection system to say those who have not paid leases, what needs to be done to get that money back. And it seems that there are no adequate contract management. And to this end, what we have done is we have tried to get significant progress to institutionalize the management of leases, and then to create capacity at the level of PLROs. We have created 49 posts for the management of leases in these provinces all over. And we think that by doing this, we should be able to have a proper management system of leases, province by province, office by office. And we say that the development of these lease contracts and a manner of collecting debt for those who owe on the leases, we need to have a clear plan for the implementation of that. It has not been there. And a clear manner of relating to the provincial departments, the MEC's offices around this. On this slide, we are saying that the mission, I've underlined earlier the importance of post-settlement support, and I think this slide captures the intention of the post-settlement support. What is it that we need to do? We say the vision and mission for that is to deliver effective settlement and implementation support which contributes and makes land agrarian reform successful in the country, to reduce poverty, enhance livelihood security, boost economic growth, and enable security of tenure and sustainable land use. But to do this, we think that there are very many role players. In terms of sustainable resource management, we think that we need to work closely with all the role players in that field of environment, township legislation, environmental development, resource management. We've got NGOs, and we've got government departments, national and provincial, and even municipalities that have got this component. And we think that we need to bring those role players close to the level of beneficiaries. In the area of skills development and business entrepreneurship development, we think we need to work closely with the Department of Labor, with all of their sectors, work on capacity development, and ensure that there is a robust engagement even with institutions of institutional development. And in terms of livelihood and enterprise development, we need technical support from the relevant departments, including IDT, because some of the land reform beneficiaries are exporting, for example, this one. So we need the role of TTI to facilitate those issues in that area. As I said, we will give you a copy of the post-settlement support booklet, which highlights some of the areas in this slide. In conclusion, Chair, we say DLA has achieved some of the objectives set under the year under review, but it was not without challenges. There were many challenges, as I've outlined in the presentation. Clearly, there is a slow pace of land delivery, and there are many factors that affect that slow pace of delivery. It is not just a matter of just the number of hectares that we must deliver, but we need to reflect on the use of those hectares that have been destroyed. And the issue of speeding up land delivery, we have agreed with the Minister on a Fijima strategy to improve on our performance. Each of our components have got a plan of how to Fijima, which is to run fast. And then we need more resources, right indicators, both for redistribution, restitution, for meeting the presidential APEC priorities. There needs to be an alignment of what we would like to achieve, alignment of the statement of priorities and goals, and alignment of those with the budget. In other words, the resource requirements for those priorities. And then we need, we have agreed with the Department of Agriculture, both nationally and in the provinces, how we should be working closely to provide post-settlement support. Let me rest my case, Chair, and say, as I leave, we have agreed with the matters of management in the department that it can no longer be business as usual. We need to work hard and make sure that we work together to go forward. We are saying that we must align our talk with our work. And let me stop there.
I see you're attempting to key questions that are actually for
Kansas. No, I was just
presenting. And, you know, members' hands have been up for the past 10 minutes already. So I could see that you're attempting to key Kansas. Can I give Dr. Hall just to give a 10-minute presentation?
First of all, I'd like to thank the committee for the opportunity to speak to you. It's a great pleasure and an honour. As the chair indicated, my name is Ruth Hall. I'm from the Programme for Land and Agrarian Studies, which is called CLAS, at the University of the Western Cape. Pleasure to share with you some reflections on this annual report by the Department of Land Affairs. Because our focus as an organisation is on land reform, I won't be dealing at all with the issues of landfill surveys issues. We'll be focusing on the land reform issues. Just to, as an introduction, to highlight some key features of the report that we think are worth drawing attention to. The report acknowledges what it calls, and I quote, the public outcry of the slow pace of land reform and reports that now a cumulative total of 4.3% of agricultural land outside of the communal areas has now been redistributed. What we see from this annual report is that the rate of delivery varies very substantially across the different provinces. Overall, the rate of delivery has been well below target. I'll come back to this point. In terms of expenditure, the budget or the adjusted budget has been spent. And what we also see from the report is that there are a great variety of new policy processes underway, some of which have been mentioned in the previous presentation. So I think that what I'd like to draw attention to is the need for an overarching policy framework to guide all of these policy processes. As was planned at the Land Summit, that there would be an integrated process for developing a new policy framework. So I suggest then that now land reform is at the turning point. Clearly there's a need to scale up delivery, but also new approaches are needed. And this will require clear political direction and will likely have very substantial resource implications. So we're talking about perhaps new approaches, but new levels of resourcing in addition. To focus briefly on land transfer, what we see from the report is that delivery of land has risen compared to previous years, but has still not met its target. So the target that was set for the financial year 2006-07 was to deliver 3.1 million hectares. This has not been met, even remotely. And I think that one of the questions I'd like to raise for the committee is some critical thinking about how these targets are actually defined and set, and whether there is any alignment between the targets that are set and the resourcing and systems and procedures that are meant to give effect to those. Okay. What we see in terms of land transfers is that through the land reform, that is redistribution and heavy reform process, just over 250,000 hectares have been delivered. And through the restitution process, just over 500,000 hectares have been approved for transfer. It wasn't quite clear from the report how many of those have been transferred. But taking that all together, we're looking at the ballpark of 27% of the target in total, if in fact all of that land has been transferred. The interesting thing here is to note that in absolute terms, the rate of delivery is increasing. But the gap between the rate of delivery and what is required to meet the overall target is growing. It's also striking from the report that there are many projects where funds have been spent and land has been transferred, yet there are no beneficiaries indicated. And I think that this is something that is worth us talking about a little more. In the area of PLAC, the Proactive Land Acquisition Strategy, it's understandable that the state is acquiring land prior to clarifying exactly who the beneficiaries are. It's land first, people later. But this is a phenomenon that we're seeing also in LRAD projects, so I think that we need to discuss why that is happening. Overall, I mentioned that there is some striking difference across different regions of the country, and what we see from the report is really quite severe underperformance in the Mpopo and the Northwest, compared to some other provinces that are doing markedly better, for instance, the Eastern Cape and KwaZulu-Natal. I think it would be useful also to hear from the department how they would explain this very great regional difference in the performance. At present, though, it's not possible on the basis of this annual report to say how much land has been transferred to how many people. There are no totals that are provided in terms of that. And I just want to comment then on, in the future, as the department reports and as this committee providing political oversight to the process of land reform evaluates its performance, what kind of information will be needed? And I've got some suggestions. What we need ultimately is equivalent information on hectares, costs, and beneficiaries or households with totals for each province for each year. So this report doesn't provide that as well. It would be useful if in the future all of these indicators can be compared to previous years, so we can see in which areas are going up or down or staying the same. If they could be disaggregated by programs, so we can look at the different programmatic areas. and disaggregated by marginalized groups, in other words, women, farm workers, the disabled, and youth. It would also be very useful if then we continually track it, as was done in fact in the previous presentation with some graphs, if we compare it to the 30% target. But to provide this kind of detailed information by program area, by province, would require the overhaul of the monitoring and evaluation system within the department. And I think this is an area where some attention is now needed. It's an understaffed area of the department, and at present is not able to produce this information, which I would argue is key for your political oversight function. In addition to just monitoring delivery, if we have to understand impact, the impact on livelihoods, the impact on local economies, the impact on land uses, we need to know who's benefiting and how they do over time, which would require that as people come into the program, we are doing some socioeconomic profiling of where they're at and then return to them over time. So it's interesting also to have a discussion about what kind of impact analysis is happening currently. There is some impact analysis being done, but often in on a project basis, but not on a continual basis. Let's turn now briefly to the issue of the budget. The department is now spending its capital budget. Over 99% has been spent. The original allocation for 2006-07 financial year was adjusted downwards by over 1.1 billion. This was mentioned in the previous presentation pertaining to the previous year, but it seems that 2006-07 as well, there was a downward adjustment. There's another issue I'd like to point to, and I think this is a long-term trend, that what we've seen is quite substantial increases in the capital budget allocation for both land reform and restitution, but that these haven't been matched by equivalent increases in the current budget. And so from the previous financial year, from last year to this year, the allocation for land reform capital budget, for instance, doubled. It grew 103% compared to only a 45% increase in the current budget. So I think that we need to not only look at the overall level of resourcing, but the relationship of current capital budget. And a related point, which doesn't particularly speak to this department, is that if one looks to some of the key budget lines in the agriculture book, we can see that MAFISA and the livelihood development support programs are either static or in slow decline over the coming years, while the CASP program is rising only very slowly. So I think that when we look at the coherence of the budgeting, we need to look at current versus capital, but also the link between the allocation to land affairs and the concomitant allocations to agriculture to provide the support that the acting DG has now mentioned. Moving on to policy development processes, it's clear from the annual report that there are a great array of policy development processes underway. What we know now, though, is that the post-land summit process has now ground to a halt, and 2 years after the summit, there is now no clear direction for the way forward. A national steering committee was established with very broad stakeholder representation, and this was meant to provide agreement and clarity on the way forward by early this year. But this hasn't happened, and the task teams on legislation, policy, and implementation have now ceased to meet. So I think that we need to discuss the broad framework for that will guide future policy development. It's clear from the report that there are new policy frameworks being developed on the issues of evictions, on land ceilings, land acquisition, expropriation, land taxes, and foreign ownership. But none of these new policy frameworks are yet in place. The report from the panel of experts on foreign ownership of land has been publicly released. In all these other areas, there are draft processes that are internal. So I think that there's a question about what is the overall policy framework. What is the process through which all of these policy approaches will be consulted on and finalized? And the question I would also ask, given the experience of the last 2 years, is what forum can now be created to take this process forward and also to resuscitate the trust of the variety of stakeholder groups in the process moving forward? There are two important new directions, though, that have been taken by the department in terms of redistribution policy, and these are area-based planning and the proactive land acquisition strategy. In terms of ABP, we know that area-based planning is now being rolled out across the country, with consultants being appointed for each district. And this is intended to provide a basis for integration of land reform into IDPs at the local level, and then also alignment with local governments and other institutions. But here again, I would point to the fact that while ADP is an important opportunity for alignment, again, there is no guidance in terms of what kind of change in agriculture is to be pursued, who should be prioritized. And therefore, it's unclear how these consultants should be weighing up the competing and often contradictory interests at the local level, and whether, in fact, they will be taking those crucial political decisions. So this suggests that there's actually a vacuum in terms of guidance on what we're trying to achieve through this process that should guide the ADP. On the proactive land acquisition strategy, it's clear that this has enabled the state to acquire large tracts of land and spend some of its allocation. But the proactive strategy also needs to be informed by an assessment of what the needs are, where they are, and which priority needs are to be addressed, so that we don't acquire land without having a very clear sense of who it's for and ensuring that that in turn is integrated into the IDP. So I think the question of the degree to which the state should be holding land for future use is something that we need to debate. Okay. If I may make some comments on tenure reform and then I'll move to close. In the area of tenure reform, and here I'm focusing not on communal tenure reform, but on tenure reform in the commercial farming area. The review of ESTA and the Labour Tenants Act is a process that's been in the pipeline since 2001, and we know that the National Eviction Survey from Nkuzi and Social Service, and also the Human Rights Commission's inquiry and the hearings that this has held, have underlined the urgency of dealing with human rights violations on farms, including tenure violations and illegal evictions. But it seems that little effort has been made to use the provisions of ESTA to grant farm owners ownership of land where they are, or development systems to establish their livelihoods elsewhere. From the department's own figures, we see that less than 50 ESTA projects have been established for farm owners since the start of this program, and instead the focus has been on regulating evictions. So I think that that's another area where we need to talk about what is the direction forward. In terms of the Labour Tenants Act, it seems fairly little progress has been made. About 200 projects have been established nationally, but it's not clear how many of the applications this represents. So of the 20,000 Labour Tenants applications that have been lodged, how many are accounted for by these 200 projects? What we do know is that in many parts of the country, particularly KwaZulu-Natal and Mpumalanga, where these claims are concentrated, many of the affected landowners have not been issued with Section 17 notices, so they haven't been notified that there are claims on their land that were lodged some years ago. And what we see in the report now is that none of the disputed claims have been dealt with in this financial year. I wasn't clear, in fact, whether that meant that there were no disputed claims. Or whether there were other reasons. I think, though, that at a broader political level, the question is, what is the direction in terms of the state's role in providing secure tenure to farm owners? I would argue that political leadership is now needed on the future of farm owners. Is the state's intention to keep farm owners on farms where they are, or is it to regulate evictions so that these happen in a legal way? Or is the state's intention to secure farm owners' rights to remain where they are and also expand their access to land? So I think that at a higher political level we need to know what we're trying to achieve through this process and whether merely enforcing existing legal provisions is adequate. To secure farm owner rights where they are would require maximum enforcement of the current provisions of ESTA and the Labour Tenants Act, but also possibly amendments to ESTA to provide substantive tenure rights in a context where these rights in law at present are highly procedural. It would also require a dedicated and well-resourced program with good intergovernmental coordination, particularly with the Department of Justice, and I would argue dedicated staff members dealing with the Farm Gorilla program, rather than land defense staff members having to deal with all the different programs. So specialist skills. And I would also argue that to take this process forward requires renewed dialogue among farm dwellers, landowners, and the state about the direction forward. In terms of institutional changes and challenges, it's clear that land affairs is a small department with an ambitious mandate that has been weakened by high staff turnover and a large proportion of vacant posts. There's a clear need for one agency to drive the process of identifying land needs, identifying and acquiring land, and planning for settlement and implementation support. It now seems that the special purpose vehicle will not go ahead. Instead, project management units are to be created in each province with the task of meeting the presidential target of 5 million hectares by 2009. But I think that we need to have some discussion about how these project management units will relate the functions, the existing functions of the provincial and district land reform offices, whether these are to work in parallel or somehow take over the function of those existing institutions. It's also clear now that there's enormous pressure on the department to deliver and to deliver at scale. But we need to address whether delivery can be scaled up with adequate support systems in place and with clear direction on who is to be prioritized, particularly since these project management units are to meet this ambitious target to deliver in 2 years what we have not delivered in the past 13. And I think that the kind of projects that get created then is critical. Are we going to only go for the big projects that are going to move a large number of hectares and budgets, or will smaller options also be available? I think there's a need for clarity there. So, do we stop and reflect? Do we move forward as fast as possible? It's a very difficult question because there clearly needs to urgently fast-track land and agrarian reform, but to ensure quality in the process. So, I would argue there's a need for speed, but not only speed. There's a need now also for greater clarity on policy, and I would highlight three areas that need attention. The first is agrarian reform policy. What are government's objectives for restructuring the agricultural sector? And how is this intended to contribute to poverty reduction and promoting a more equitable growth path in the rural areas? In other words, what is land reform? What kind of developmental shift is land reform to be part of? The second is what approach to implementation? What land reform delivery mechanisms are going to be adopted in response to the Land Summit resolution? And finally, what kind of institutional reforms will this require? And I think clarity in these areas, in these three areas, may provide the basis for greater financial commitment from government, from Treasury. In conclusion, the annual report, and I hope that people don't get offended if I said it so bluntly, the annual report shows a chronic mismatch between the intended scale of the program and the actual resources, policies, and systems available to meet these goals. So the top priorities then are this wider framework for agrarian reform, the need for land affairs and the Minister of Department of Agriculture to undertake joint policy developments in the area of agricultural land reform. Of course, not all land reform is agricultural, but this is the heart of the program. The third top priority then is for political leadership on the issue of farm dwellers' tenure rights. Fourthly, clarity on those institutional arrangements that will be needed to drive a more strategic and interventionist approach. And finally, for the department to demonstrate concretely what would be needed in terms of staffing and resources to scale up both the protection of existing land rights and the expanded delivery of land. So thank you very much. I'll leave you with a quote from 14 years ago. The massively unequal distribution of land is not just the unfortunate legacy of apartheid. It is the totally unacceptable continuation of apartheid. So that seems to be our continuing challenge. Thank you.
No. Don't put words in there. If you want to, don't waste it, you can.
I'm not joking. I'm not
Thank you very much, Chair. Firstly, thank you, Jefferson. Jefferson, firstly, I want to thank
the presentation by Doctor will be made available.
I want to thank both the acting DG for having joined the Hollywood Brigade, and also Dr. Hall. I just want to remind the acting DG that he is now on a real hotbed, but what is more is that the hotbed is strewn with thorns. So be very careful. Now, Chair, there are interesting things that have been said here. The problem is this department really taking public representatives seriously? Is this department really telling us whatever is brutally correct and true, or is it a means of trying to put a full wool over our eyes? You are judged not but by what you promise you are going to do. You are judged by where you come from. And remember, we as public representatives are there, we put ourselves there to see that our people can aspire for a better tomorrow. And that comes me to your commitment to Batopili. I want to ask, Chair, is it Batopili when correspondence is sent to your department on behalf of people on the ground for months on end remain unanswered? I'll show you correspondence which I have personally sent May 2005. I sent in January 2005 on behalf of a Tata Soko. I sent on a Tata Joshua Mokwena, who was facing eviction and who had a herd of cattle and looking for a farm, way back in on the 23rd of February 2005, sent to say I did not get a single response. Right, we have a proactive land acquisition strategy. I know of many farmers who have offered land to the department. In the one case, on four different occasions, this farmer is told at his insistence that there is no land claim on his land or her land. On four other occasions, this farmer is told, no, but they do have a land claim on the land. I personally sent a letter addressed to the DDG some time ago. I did not get a response to that. Now, Chairperson, this is not how Batopili works. When I contacted one of your regional officers in Bethlehem on behalf of a person that was being evicted on a farm and even being threatened that they would put a bomb under his home if he doesn't move, the person tells me, the official tells me, but why are you phoning me? Why can't that person phone me? So I said, the trouble is you people don't respond to them. That is why they don't phone you. Because they don't get any joy out of calling you. But Jefferson, I mention these things. Because when we talk of Batopili, I expect the DG now
to write to every office in the country and inform them that when any public representative approaches them, he approaches them on behalf of people. I don't have a personal or pecuniary interest. My interest is to see that that person's rights are not violated, that that person is assisted in some way or the other. Now, having said that, Chair, I have a couple of questions. Firstly, when I look at I want to refer to page 72, please take. Out of 57 project implementations, 41 of them have zeros in terms of the number of households. Dr. Hall also referred to that. Please explain. I mean, this is for the financial year, which is over 12 months. And in that 12 months, were all these properties acquired or registered or transferred or whatever, all at the end of the financial year, or was it done earlier? Because there must be some other answer. Then, Chair, I do not see any uniformity in the various provinces. I note that in the one province they talk of households, in the other they talk of beneficiaries and all that sort of thing. Can we in future have some other degree of uniformity? And then, Chair, again, with regard to Batopili, I would like, you won't be able to respond to it today, but on the 12th of October 2007, in the Farmers Weekly, there's a headline there, "Don't work with whites, officials advise black farmers." Now, Chair, if you look at this particular report, and please, it's a report, I don't say it is what really happened, but I feel that it is necessary that we as a department are not seen to be promoting or engendering any form of racial discrimination. And we should check out this particular report and see whether what is contained in there is true or not. Because it is alleged that an official of your department has made it quite clear to the beneficiaries, you either do it my way and get rid of this white guy, or I'll stop the sale. No, this is not a good omen. So one needs to look at this, and I ask that we get a report on this. And I would like to remind the game chair that there are many occasions when we have at these portfolio committee meetings requested that certain things be reported back to us, and said to say, on many issues, we don't hear again about it. And unfortunately, I don't have the memory of an elephant, but I think I must go and make friends with them so that I can get a little bit of their wisdom. Chair, there are two or three questions that I have. When does the department expect to complete CLARA regulations and present them to the committee? And what is the current situation with the legal wrangle, the litigation? Then, Chair, what kind of provision has been made to provide necessary technical and financial support to municipalities for implementation of land reform in line with municipal IDPs? Then, sir, the unspent donor funds of 459,000 rand brought forward from the 2005-2006 financial year was paid back during the year under review to the Danish embassy. Why was this money not utilized? According to the Public Service Commission, a report on financial misconduct, the department has lost 20 million rand due to financial misadministration or maladministration during the 2005 and 2006 financial year. The department must give us an explanation on this. Chair, I will not want to take control of everything. Thank you very much, Chair.
I wish I could have been here for 2-3 hours extra to ask further questions.
Yeah, you have inspired Honorable Zali to be brief. Honorable Buddha.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think the inspiration for the Honorable Dali to be brief would take a very, very long time. I must have sympathy with the acting GG, if you'll pay attention here, not have another meeting. We're sailing over a very, very hot seat, I must agree with the Honorable Avram Lane. I hope that the successes that he did bring to your portfolio, but he has brought a lot of successes to the institution, but he will also now bring to redistribution. And I think the important thing there is he mentioned the problems and use of service providers to assess the situation. And I think this could be a key, Mr. Gwanya, to getting through some of the cobwebs that we have in the department, and especially in land reform at the moment. You mentioned it's a drop in the, what's happened so far is a drop in the ocean. Now, I also want to quote something like, as not only it's a different system that's working here.
What system is that?
It switched off.
It's on the new phone, doesn't
it? There we go. Very sorry. I also have a quote by Dr. Hall, and the quote is the following: a bend in the road is not the end of the road unless you fail to make the turn. Now this quote comes from the previous minister, Metoko Rajiza, and I think it's very important for us to see whether we're going to take some turns in the road now. And that is by looking outside the department for assistance, as you already done in certain senses. And I want to know from you whether you will open the process of land offered and how it is dealt with to regular and transparent scrutiny. You have regular transparent scrutiny coming before this committee on the yearly performance of the department. But the Honourable Alram also mentioned, and I can mention to you numerous cases where people battled. Very recently, a member of parliament told me how he battled to sell a piece of land near Heilbronn, small piece of land, 250 hectares, for 2 years. And the repeated calls, the repeated letters he wrote to the regional office, and every time he contacted them again after a few months, they didn't know what he was talking about. He had to restart the whole process. He eventually, because he's a member of parliament, he remained committed and he kept trying. Very few people can afford to keep trying for 2 years to do this. Eventually, recently he gave up, he put the thing on the open market, and within 2 weeks, the land was sold. Now, there's something wrong, something very, very basically wrong. And we've been talking about this for years, and we can keep talking about this for years. The only way to fix it is to open it up for scrutiny. And I would suggest to you, I don't say this is the be all and the end all of it, but I would suggest to you that we use the provincial legislators, and each one has got a portfolio committee of agriculture, that on a regular basis, all land offers and how it's been dealt with should be presented to those committees. And you can also do it in municipalities. And in this way, we don't have to have the situation where Mr. Abram has had letters not answered for 2 years. This will be in the open where the media is sitting and can report about and name and shame situations where people are not dealing with the matters they should be dealing with. And I do believe we could have a marked difference in this situation. And secondly, post-support settlement. You mentioned the whole problem of post-support settlement. But it doesn't only start there. It starts even before settlement, before land is purchased for LRAD. Dr. Hall mentioned the situation where large tracts of land now bought and gives good numbers on pieces of paper. But what are we achieving when a large piece of land is bought and there's not even a designated beneficiary or beneficiaries for this? I would like to take you to a particular example, because I think it's a very important example. It also comes in to the article that the Honourable Avram mentioned there. One of the very best known, and certainly one of the very best farmers in the country, and you know the person, I'm not going to mention the name, not mentioned, in the town where I live in Fulham, battled for 3 years. And I know the case very, very well, because from time to time he appealed to me to assist him. To sell a farm, a very, very good farm, to a dedicated group of employees and managers. And this would be quite clear, these managers are previously disadvantaged people. To sell the farm to them, and he offered free financial assistance in as far as administration is concerned for 5 years. And he offered a very, very detailed plan of mentoring for the next 5 years. He has now sold that farm. But he sold it to nobody. He sold it to the department. So at least a vaccine. So he said to him, the problem here is, you want to remain the boss. And what's saying to the whole department? This is the office he had to deal with. We can't deal with any office. We'd like to deal with the area office. They refused his whole program. They refused his plan. One of the best plans of land reform I've ever seen in the years I've been busy with this. And that farm is now leased back to the owner. He's not still the boss. And there's no beneficiary. My plea to you is, and I'd like an answer on this one. Well, can you, as acting DG, and I hope you will become the DG, can you then please ensure that farmers are used to mentor new farmers? You know, only farmers can farm. It's been proven in the world, nobody else farms but a farmer. And only farmers can train farmers. With all respect to Dr. Hall here, I yet want to see a single... No extension officer, no organization of farmers have ever farmed anywhere or trained farmers. Only farmers can train farmers. Will you please, sir, I beg this of you, will you really not just put words to it, but use farmers to train other farmers? If you do that, I promise you those graphs for land reform will improve markedly in 2004. You know, you've got this whole article recently in the paper. The whole country is concerned about what is going on, actually what is not going on in land reform, and the political implications it can have for us in the future. Please let us get down to opening up the whole process to transparency and utilizing farmers to drive the process. Thank you.
Well, you know, it's quite a nice country to stay, and you're welcome here. As much as we welcome many Zimbabweans for coming over this side. Welcome. Honorable Fanica.
Thank you, Chair Marshall, for introducing yourself. Could I just say in the beginning, I've watched the acting DG, been involved with him for a long time, and I've seen him grow and understand the problems that we have, and I hope that his experience and practical approach to things will help us get this department on the go again. I will really support you, because I know that you know what is going on. I've just got a couple of things. I won't be long. Basically, in terms of, if you want to use land bank can't even help themselves, so don't put your money on land bank to help you out of this predicament. The question of the price of farmland is an economic reality. As long as we are in a free market situation, the price of farmland will vary and it will have a certain value. And the moment you start controlling or interfering that, you're having a downchain reaction with other consequences eventually. So that the beneficiaries of cheaper land, because of control, eventually is not in a free market. So be careful on that. I want to come to the point in terms of reform and restitution. I think we all accept, and especially from the party, that we accept restitution and reform. It's the question of the way it is being done and the method that is being applied. And if we look at the people who really can help, that is the commercial sector of not speaking of farmland and not in terms of settling people just on land, in terms of the farm sector's reform, which is required. If I say to you, sir, that the frustration amongst the commercial farmers in South Africa is high, that at the moment, and you were at their congress, where what they did, they say they listen to the department, they listen to it, but we're going to do our own thing. We're just putting you aside, we are just going to go on and do the right things, which work. We're going to get foreign money to do this. We're not going to involve because we've got frustration from the department. Take heed of that and get them on your side if you really want to have accelerated reform in this country. They're willing, but their frustration level is very high at the moment. Question which I'd like to ask you, sir. I've had some interaction with reform projects in the Western Cape, in the Northern Cape, and also in other provinces. The department uses certain, contractors to write business plans for new reform actions. Now, I've looked at those business plans, and then they are being paid basically 10% of the capital value of that project. They complete that, and the moment that they finish, they look at the next contract they should do. There's no follow-up, and those plans are disastrous. Really, that is something you really have to look at. So please, sir, that is something which we really cannot ignore, because many of the failures come from the fact that there was no sensible business plan, there was no mentoring in that business plan, and there was no follow-up on the business plan to correct it, because the business plan has to be adapted as things go along. It's just not a fixed piece of paper that you do now and stand for 5 or 10 years. So, eviction statistics. Illegal evictions. If people do illegal evictions, will have to take action against this. But it seems to me that every eviction is now being termed illegal. What statistics do you use? Where do you get these statistics in which actually puts people or the farming community in a bad light? Because I would say the majority, the large majority of the farming community will not tolerate illegal evictions. And those who do illegally evict people, name them. And I think the sector will take appropriate action against people, because we are not against it. And I think you know that, and it's been said over and over again. Then, in terms of your spatial planning, 69% vacancy there. Isn't that one of our big problems that you should contract that question out? Because there are spatial planners outside the department, I think, really assist. If we don't have a really sensible spatial planning, a lot of other things fall through. And then, sir, the interaction with the Department of Agriculture. What is the basis? Because what I see in terms of the mentorship, in terms of the extension officers, what's happening there? I'll give you one example. If a plan for, say, a sale of farmland in terms of deeds, transfer. I think that the Department of Land is quite efficient in doing that. But then, at the Department of Agriculture, I have now a list of about 200 people who are waiting for 2 years now for these transfers. Where is this problem? Does it lie with the Department of Agriculture? Or what's happening there? Because this is becoming a totally unacceptable situation, because it's got an economic effect, which then has a tremendous effect on a certain district. I think I'll stop there.
I thought you'd use it as a
transfer. Yeah. Hopefully some of the pressures are not migrated to him.
Yeah, thanks, Jefferson. Is this thing working?
Yeah.
Thanks, Jefferson. I want to also to join the colleagues of welcome the acting DG, though in fact he is not a new broom, because he has been part of this department. The man that I'm going to refer you now, you are well aware of it. Thank you. There are two things, Jefferson, that I want to raise. There was a document, a presentation that was circulated to us when we had to, I won't say chase them back, but to request them to go back. Which I think the request that was made then still have to get the information in terms of the cost that was incurred by them of coming here and going back to the story. The reason I'm raising that issue, Chairperson, first is because have numbered this document. The document that was presented to us then, I remember the document number one. The document with the presentation which was referred to us now, I've numbered as document number two. I'll tell you why I'm doing that. Firstly, you'll find that the figure that has applied to us are completely different figures. And the format that is used, if you look at the first document number one, it is talking to us in terms of the stress plan, your output and whatever, which is, I suppose, that is in terms of the reporting mechanism, in terms of the PSMA, which is section 40, subsection 3A, and section 65, subsection 2A, in terms of the requirement of the format of the reporting. But if you see the new document, document number 2, that document doesn't say anything, because the format that has been, it doesn't talk to the stress plan in terms of your target and the output. So what then I'm going to do, I'm going to ask in terms of the judgment number one, the judgment number one, which is definitely shows your output and your stress plan in terms of what has been done. Firstly, Chair, if I may come back to the question. There are certain issues which are raised by AG, which I want them to respond to us. In relation to, I think you have indicated, the poor assessment management control. I think that needs to be, they will need to be explained exactly what is going on there. The other issue that has been raised by also the AG is in relation to the issue that has been raised every now and again. Failure to comply with section 8, subsection 1 of the PSMA. That particular issue was raised right from 2002-2003 financial year, 2003-2004 financial year, 2004-2005 financial year, 2005-2006 financial year. That has not been addressed for the past 4 years. I just want to know exactly what is going on there. Having said that, in terms of, let me come to the restitution. I'll refer you to document number 2, which talks about the remaining claims, 5,122 claims, did not be settled by the target date of 2008. That is your document number 2, page 13. But if you look at the document number 1, which was presented, was given to us, which is page 26 of that particular document. The page 26 of that document talks about different figures from 50, which I want them to explain to us. It talks about the target by 2008 is 3,243 claims, as opposed to the document number 2. That's why I thought I'm going to refer to that document, so I think it's here exactly whether the new presentation has been gerrymandered or not, in terms of maybe try to confuse us. I'll put some of us to read this document. We are not going to be confused at all. The other issue, Chairperson, I want to give in terms of the program. Let me start from program number one. The issue that has been raised under program number one, I'll start with the issue that has been raised by the acting DG, that they've withdrawn the SPV. You heard this SPV, they've got the PMUs, now you've got plus. I don't know which is which. You just need to explain to us exactly. But in terms of the document number one, program A, it was said that the target, 2007, policy framework developed with the Department of Housing and provincial and local government. I want to know, in terms of this particular issue, because I think it was raised in relation to the eviction, this particular fire issue, but how far are we with this process? Because here it says the process has been undertaken, has been taken over by the FPC. Now the case has been set aside and something else. I hope, Chairperson, they're not going to draw another plan again after the plan has been done, and even before it is implemented, it's been shared that another plan coming here. Let me go further, Chairperson, in terms of the program one. In terms of Clara, in program one, we talk about the policy legislation and legislative reform to benefit. This has not been achieved, said not achieved. That's in terms of the PSA approach, in terms of the reporting mechanism. That is not achieved. I want to know how far this process is in terms of this particular implementation. Because the target here was the 31st of March 2007. We need just to know exactly how far we are here. The question, let me jump to the question of program number one complete. Well, there are a number of questions in program number one, but let me leave that one. Program number one again, fraud prevention and anti-corruption summit is an action plan implemented. In terms of the target, 2012, supposed to be March 2007, but then partially approved just explain to us in terms of that particular process, you know. That's the program one. I forgot about the program one. In terms of your stress plan. I'm comparing your stress plan and your reporting mechanism. That you need to explain to us in terms of that one, how far that process is. In terms of the 5-year communication strategy to support the DLA's core objectives, that's program number one also. Not achieved. Why? Not achieved. That needs also to be explained. That's under program one. But let me move on. I'll jump program two for maybe to some of my colleagues that will give you that program two. Let me deal with program three. Program three, in terms of the amended survey legislation. We've not yet submitted programs. You know, I'm raising this here. I'll come back to program four, because the program four is going to talk about some of our issues. Consultation process took longer than expected. Why? Tell us why. Because this is the issue that in terms of the process, for example, this committee has never dealt with a single bill. But the whole year, you know, we are going to what is right very soon. And even next year, maybe until middle of the year, because by end of the year we'll be going for campaign for elections. This committee has never been presented by a single thing. I'll come back to the lamb, because I still have to deal with the lamb later. Program 4. I've dealt with that particular part that I wanted to raise that is. Program 4, in terms of the target, percentage of agricultural land restored to restitution claimed by March 2008. In terms of the target, there is 100% target exceeded. This is presentation that I sent to us. I'm just going to know, because if you compare these judgments, they're not talking to one another at all, absolutely at all, then you just need to explanation that one. There was a proposal that you presented to us some time ago, around the eviction under this particular issue. The corridor. You talk about the corridor some time ago. You say that you are having alternative land in terms of this issue. But if you look at this has not been achieved at all, and there is absolutely no update to us to say exactly how far are we with that conscious corridor. We talk about evictions almost every day, but the alternative settlement that you told me that you're going to do, that has not been done. And we want to know exactly how far are you in that particular process. Chair, if I need to go to program 5. Program 5, around the responses and improved systems and process of land restitution of agricultural LRAS. In program 5 here, the science consensus formed by all stakeholders, not achieved. Why? It seems to me, if you go through, that most of the programs, per program, there's not a single item that's the item that is achieved. It's either partial achieved or not achieved at all. Maybe you need to explain to us in terms of exactly what has happened in terms of this program. Let me deal with program number 6. If you look at program number 6 in relation to your report, that provincial scale map, the method, that you know it, which links with the deeds of course. We're told some time ago that in Mpumalanga and other areas, there's a process that has been undertaken that has been completed. But if you look at this, maps are available and are continuously updated for finalized projects in the Bofo, KZN's case, and Northern case. We want you to know how far this process is, because this is going to link to your CLARA, is it? What the problem with implementation of CLARA is around this deed and mapping and also the survey. For if that survey has not been addressed, that implementation of CLARA is not going to be addressed at all, and it's not going to be achieved at all, I can assure you. Gentlemen, if you allow me just to end in terms of one or two questions. There's an issue of staffing which I need to deal with document number 2. I've noted under document number 2, which I think my comrade next to me crying has cancelled there to that particular one.
Brother, not comrade. Oh, sorry, my brother cried. Brother leader Kadhafi.
Yeah, you know. If you look at the vacancy in terms of the this particular program 1, I think the question is happening as you raised 68%.
68.18%. In fact, most of them, generally, the vacancy rate is very, very, very high. So your vacancy rate, it was reported about 2 financial years, it was about 27%, and still stays at 27%, which I don't understand why. I'm referring to this because the unit that came before us was president, honestly, that policy unit, they said there's only 2 members, only 2 in that unit. That's why I've noticed the document number 2 here, that is, it has been raised, that's on page, I think it's page 5, this is about page 5 of this document, or page 7 of document number 2. You know, this particular issue, I want to know, because when, what is Dr. Ruth? Oh, Bandit, that was before us here. The question of implementation of that particular recommendation for the foreign land ownership, though I think the business day on that day, then we caught it up, Chair. I thought maybe that is going to be rectified. But they said the ANDT, you see, they are questioning the question of registration, rate, and all those things. Which ANC has no position on that one. The ANC has got simple position that the ANC has a non-racial organization. In terms of that recommendation, we said that must be reported on race and gender because that we know exactly where we stand in terms of this thing. The business day was wrong with that one. Absolutely out of order. But anyway, let's leave that one. We'll deal with that another time. I'm raising this question of this unit. Because this unit is a serious problem. It's a serious, serious problem. Because the legislation, the bill that was supposed to be presented to us, the lamp, they call it lamp. Or lamp, or lamp, whatever. Because we are formal. Yeah, they are formal. Your lamp, whatever. But this lamp business, it has been before you for the past 7 years. And you are saying in that recommendation, the question of the registration and other issues are going to be dealt with by that legislation. Piece, the certain piece of that recommendation. But that is not to be brought before us. And when it was reported to us, there is no plan when that's going to come before us. But if they are still saying that this bill is going to address certain issues, you are wasting our time, I'm telling you. This unit is a disaster. It's a crisis in this unit. You are saying, yes, the review of the willing seller, willing buyer, whatever you call it, willing buyer, willing seller. You know, guys, when we had a land summit, what's the land summit? Somewhere in London. Somewhere, whatever. We have recommendation. Until today, no, come on. Until today, there's not even a single of those recommendations implemented. You are still talking about the reviewer here in this document. I say I can collect documents, I can collect 8, 9, 10 documents back. They're sort of review. It's because they're tautology. It can't be a tautology. Every now and again, they talk about the reviewer of this will by a willing seller. It's absolutely no movement. Why? If you are serious about the land reform guide, unless you pull up the socks. If you don't pull up the socks, I think the president once said, this 2005, State of the Nation, that if this civil service they don't work, they must resign. They must just go. Is it? Otherwise, these the policy makers are making very good policies, but the implementers are not implementing those policies at all. That's just making happy. That's the restitution, Jim. Your restitution is in crisis. Yesterday, yes, the land bank, they told about the land which was sold, and that land was under claim. And that seller was with murder. Because he sold the land, and then it was sold, and the land bank and yourself, you did communicate to say, this land is under claim. And the result of that, I don't know how much millions that you have lost in that land. Because the seller has gone with the money, you see? You can't get that money back from that seller. You did not advise the land bank that such a piece of land is under claim. And we don't know why the land bank didn't check with you. We don't know why you didn't check the land bank. You see, sir, if I had a position, I would say that money must be taken from this guy. But they are responsible. From this guy. The land bank is supposed to advise by them. Any land that's on a claim. You can't sell a land that's on a claim. That's going to be paid later. And that money is going down the drain. We need to know that. We must, the system must get a full, detailed, written information.
will travel that particular piece of land. Last issue. I requested information from you guys in Oga on three pieces of area. It was Umalanga, on Khalesnath in Matapian, and Mawati. What is I'm shocked now? I must say I'm shocked. There's a piece of information which just put under my nose now by the staff department, whatever. It was pushed for Mr. Dalit. Because I requested this information now because I knew that I'm going to ask this question. It was just pushed now. The email is dated 30 August 2007 at 3:50 p.m. You know? It was sent. If it was correct. But it was just pushed now because they knew that I'm going to ask this question. I have said why? In August. It's pushed under my nose now. So come tell me. Thank you very much.
Honorable Bill
Clinton. No, honorable man. Honorable man. I'm not really as Mr. Dali, because I detect change in the wind that is blowing in the department, and I think that the acknowledgement of failure and the emphasis that is put on rectifying that in the post-settlement support, that is to me very encouraging, because that was one of our biggest problems in the past. A few questions, sir, and you talked about 1.5 million hectares in state land. I agree with that. I agree with your arguments on that. Where does the land of municipalities come in? Is that included in that or not? And the other thing, you talked, my voice is going, but I'll try to put another question. You talked about 11 billion to 15 billion land that is necessary for the claims that is still there. Have you talked to Treasury about this or the minister? And is they are they in knowledge of this amount of money that is needed to settle that claim? Then, sir, the investigation by the Public Service Commission, can you tell us, or can you not, what was investigated, what was the proposals of the PC, and what is being done about their recommendations? And the one thing that is very near to my heart, and I must say that that is one of the things that I keep hammering on, and that is, I cannot do others but to ask of how much importance is the implementation of CLARA for the department. Because in your, as Mr. Dali called it, number one, document number one, you said that all the targets over there is not achieved. And I think if importance is a case, developing the communal lands in this country is as important as redistribution of land, and really we must look at this in future. And as I understand it, there is only two people who is working on this on this, and it cannot be. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. I also wish to congratulate the acting DG, but one would wish and hope that he is not the one. I know that he would do that when I'm talking. One would hope that the acting DG will not act catastrophically. You either be promoted to the permanent DG or somebody else will come in. Chairperson, one shudders when one hears that the IDP is going to be integrated into the municipality because of the incapacity of the municipalities, especially the small municipalities. If, for instance, you go to Mjata, the Inkosi knows. They are not working there. The offices are closed. They are chasing each other with guns. They are fighting. So when are they going to work? When are they going to implement this IGP? Chairperson, in your strategic context, you talk about a contribution to poverty alleviation and economic development in this document. Now, one would like to say, in the previous TPBC case, there are farms there which were sold, given as a police to the South Africans or the people of those areas. Now, some of those farms are very fertile. Now, one would like to know. Those farms are lying fallow, first of all. They are lying fallow. If you would go to Transkei, Eastern Cape, Transkei, wherever, you'll find those farms are lying fallow. And in the meantime, we'll talk about allegation of poverty and what is it. Now, what are you doing about those farms? How are you helping those people? That is my first question. My second question, Chair, is going to be on page 13 of this presentation. Your slide 25. There you made mention of what is left is 5,000 of rural claims. 5,000 rural claims. After that, you made mention, I didn't quite get you, of one third, which will be difficult to settle. But I do not remember hearing you indicating as to why that there's a one third which will be difficult to settle. Could you make us know what could be the problem with just one third of this 5,000? On page 16 of the same document, the slide 31, you address the last bulletin, that is 30% of 84 million. You said we need to up our delivery. Now one would ask the question, what is it that you are not doing now that you will do in your attempt to up your delivery? Now coming to the actual book, the annual report, on page 137. I have got three bulletins there where there was the power of attorney. The provinces, in terms of that power of attorney, must send money over, transfer money to the national offices. Now, one would like to know, as we speak now, where are those money? Are they still with the department? Have they been transferred to you? Below that, you make mention of the fact that he's going to take it. You make mention of the fact that the provinces must report on a 6-monthly basis. And now one would like to know, what is the position now? Are they reporting or are they not reporting? And are you satisfied with their report? The last one, Chair, would be, how much is with these provinces? All the monies which are come under that power of attorney, are you able to get a figure as to say how much do these provinces hold or keep, which should have been in your account? Lastly, Chair, there's a piece of legislation which we call ESTA. Do you think this piece of legislation, ESTA, is effective enough to fulfill its purpose or its objective? Thank you, Chair.
Inkomo mtshamo wa xikulu. A ndzi kona tshungula kwini yakwe ka ku pfumela ndhawini. But let me start by thanking the department on the presentations laid before us, and also sent a class also for the information that it has given unto us. Chairperson, the department has given us, you know, its strength as well as its weaknesses. And then CAP has given us, you know, the critical part of it, which I think was a constructive one. And then CAP has also laid before us the challenges that are facing the department. And to me, it's good because these challenges are coming from an entity outside the department. You know, at times it's got to criticize constructively, and it's got to allow the criticism, even if maybe at times you find that this particular one is not for me, you take it, you know, for the sake of progress. When one gets into the battlefield, he goes there being ready. He goes there with the necessary, you know, ammunition. So I am moving from a different point, Honorable Chairperson, that if there are so many vacancies that have not been, you know, resolved, if there are some financial constraints, you know, that the human resource was in terms of vacancies, how do we expect to move forward? I would propose that we look at these challenges and ensure that some of them really get addressed, so that when we interact with the department, we show that we have addressed most of the challenges that are facing them. There are other big challenges, this one whereby more than 100, you know, post the applicants or the persons responsible have to vacate to other departments. You know, it's something which we have to look into it. We cannot have a situation whereby we employ today, 6 months down the line, you know, the people have moved to other departments. We've got to look for the problem. We are saying we're planting our own trees. So in us planting this tree, let us maintain the greenness so that these trees do not bend looking for sunlight, you know, towards the other area. And then I think the intention of it all, Chairperson, you know, with all the problems that have been raised here, is that at the end of the day, we come out of this meeting as a unified government, the government of South Africa, and as we go differently, we sing the very same song. I think that is the intention of our committee meetings here. And then let me go and ask a question, which is related to the rural claims. You know, the challenges, some of your challenges were that you've got those things which are untraceable. And then, as one was ready to ask you that question, you came with a response, you know, somewhere in your input. But one would like to know that on these things that are untraceable, were you addressing it through the media? Is the media assisting you? How far are you going on this one? And then, the other challenge which faced you, especially in relation to rural claims, was the question of the geographic map. You were unable to locate, you know, this area. Are you now able? Do you now have this map which let you come back over Laileka or Tungu, Naileka Mslava, Imaspala, Wini, and so on? And then the last part, Honorable Chair. This the acting DG also, you know, responded to this question, but partially. One would like to know on the question of the 55,000 rand per hectare, What informs this 55,000 rand? Is it maybe the infrastructure within the land, or just a low-lying land, you know, with nothing in it? I said, you know, I'm a telegram, fine, thank you.
I'm sure there are a few members that can learn from you.
Maybe we can learn a few things, I don't know. Chairperson, thank you very much, and the presentation by the team, DG and the team. I just want to agree, Jefferson, with Comrade Porter. Provided. I'm saying, as much as I agree with you when you say only a farmer can train another farmer. It doesn't really matter whether you have degrees, but if you don't have experience, it's going to be very difficult to train an ordinary emerging farmer on the ground who has no experience, who needs to be appreciated. We need to have experience. More than the education, so also needed. But are the farmers prepared to train our emerging farmers? That's the question. Are they ready? Because as far as I know, from where I come from, we have emerging farmers who, the farmers, the commercial farmers, volunteer to train these people. And in return, they are taking all the profits from them. And then they go back to sell. Some of the farmers, they're talking about, you know, in the homeless, the old homeless, are lying terrible because they said to them, we will train you to grow cartoon. When it's time to harvest, then those farmers come on their horses and come to take all the cartoon and go away because they say, you pay this, you pay manure, you pay cotton that you get in seed, we pay this. And people have lost interest in that. I'm taking this from experience. But I'm saying if people are prepared, then you're right. Then they can teach them. Not for days, to teach these people also how to catch fish. But Comrade Cry also say.
we overcry,
generalize to say we shouldn't generalize to say we should name the farmer who is it, the farm worker. I don't know whether you don't look at the TV, you don't read paper. You don't listen at the radio, because all the names of these folks are being said loudly in the radio. Maybe they're not your members of the SAA, I don't know. But the names are said clearly, even the faces of the people who have been killed and killing our people. You see them. But you cannot now come and say we shouldn't generalize that if you are innocent about all this. You can't do something about it to prove that we don't have to give you names. You see them there, they are advertised. One of them has just kept our woman for almost a year in the water. Refusing, you saw him, you know his name. In Pulubani. What you think unless if you don't know this thing? I don't agree with you.
Okay.
And thank you very much, all for the good presentation. I'm just wanting to share some of the things here. Acting a duty, I'm worried about the resignations of the people from Program 1 of the Administration Human Resource. I'm very worried about the resignation 201 resignation. I don't know what really makes the people to resign besides going for greener pastures. You should make me to retain these people, because that's the reason why all the time we have these vacancies. So maybe there are people who are very experienced who are leading us for greener pastures. So I think that has to be also looked into. So you say you advertise in this post. Will the post advertise going to limit the lithium market? You told us about advertising the truth to limit the lithium market. And also the ones that you see you have actually taken to even the battery, 168. Have you made some arrangements of how long are they going to be staying with us when they finish? So that they mustn't actually come and go, and we still actually go back to square one. Those are the things that Land Bank was telling us, they are just training people for goodwill. And I think this is about time so that we should strengthen this department to keep people to stay with us and give them better standards. From plus, Peterson, I saw the slide that I'll tell you which one is towards the end. What direction for farm dwellers? I think I'm quite, what direction for farm dwellers? You say political leaders is now needed on the future of farm dwellers. I think this slide to me is very educational, and I think we should actually explore this, because we have been talking about the problems that the farm dwellers are actually faced with in their workplace, and that we need to do something to accommodate this. I think Honorable Dupree has actually mentioned this about ESTA, that what are we doing about ESTA. We should actually make sure and also get answer what is the problem of this department of ours not to come up with the arrangement as we agreed, to try and tighten ESTA to protect our people. And I'm very happy about the your submission plus. I think it's very educational, and we need to interact on it. Thank you, Chair.
Just a few emphasis on that part before you respond, DG. Given this profound challenges that we have in terms of policy work that we still need to do. As Honorable Dali was saying, we got a little, worried when we interacted with Dr. Sibanda that policy think tank of the department has got no staff, only two members. And given all these profound policy challenges that we have arising, but in part from the next summit, but also arising from a whole range of legislations that we have passed, the current challenges that we face, I think, some of the things that you say, we could reach a little bit of ambition if we don't arise the issue of capacity of that policy unit. But That broadly takes me to the issue, generally, of the reconciliation of the department. What is the plan there? You know, I'm worried that if you look at some of the key focus, this registry, land reform and administration, the level of vacancy rate there is rising from 26% to 31%. I'm sure that may not be accepted. So, I don't know from where you're sitting, what is the plan with regard to this situation, given the challenges that, that you have in terms of realizing your objectives. Now, there's about 199 people that have been transferred to other. Okay, I suppose they got posts in other government departments. So therefore, there the issue of salary can't be, or the issue about the greener pasture. I suppose pasture is online, but so it cannot be the actually, you know, a factor. I suppose if you are a senior manager in affairs, you earn the same salary if you are a senior manager in water affairs or something else. Now, which then brings me to the question about the environment. Do we think that the working conditions within the department, the environment, and that can only be created by senior managers that you are here? Besides that, it provides a way watching people, you know, to stay in the department. The other issue is it's about this election. Now, I can't understand why the legislation is there. There's no legal support for the potential district chief. You made reference to the NGO, the legal rural legal trust. I mean, I can't understand why an NGO, which is what is being funded, should be entrusted with the responsibility to provide our people with the basic rights for, you know, legal representation. I can't understand it. We must do something about it. The other question that I wanted to establish from you, how often do you meet with organized agriculture? Not the through the presidential working groups, but how often do you think you are talking past each other in terms of the things that you need to do in terms of land and agrarian reform? And is there a platform where there's engagement about and around this issue? So, in your responses, also do some reflections on the, I hope you've got the presentation by Black, on some of the proposals that they are making. Just preliminaries about some of these issues. If you've got a copy, if you don't have a copy, can you arrange them a copy?
I took copies of the
okay,
I can respond.
So I'm not sure if that thing is the key for us, or but in any event, it's not even going to be enough. Or should we just take a 5-minute comfort break, and when we come back, we take response. Yeah.
No,
no, no, no, what can you take in? All right.
and I emailed it to Chairman to 30 to this office on the 30th. When I find the report covers all the information. I've got a copy here. And in this email which Mr. Fali was referring to, it says that kindly bring this information to the attention of the chairperson and distribute to members accordingly. So I'm appealing for protection that if we have submitted the information, at least it must be, we must be protected so that other members...
That's the email of the chairperson?
Yeah, that's the email of the 30th, because I concluded the report on the 30th of August. So it was circulated, and then it was submitted to the office, to your office, Chair. So,
my office, I started on the 4th of September. It's okay, let's go.
Yeah, not to you, not to you personally, Chair, but
yeah,
to your office.
My office, yeah.
And the intention for your office was that the office must distribute to all of the members. So I'm just appealing for your protection that when we submit.
No, you are protected, because okay. See, I said why am I don't have it, so.
Yeah,
I'm a victim of transition.
Okay,
yeah.
Just on a point of clarity. Now that this is transpiring, can we be informed as to what the motion is going to be? Are we going to be provided with the report?
Yeah, I will not come.
Thank you very much.
Alright. My approach there will be that I will ask my colleagues to respond to the various questions, and you will respond to the issues that relate to the program side, including eviction, and Commissioner Thomas Buga will respond to the registration questions, and the CFO will respond to the financial questions, and Anton van Staden will respond to the personnel questions, and my colleague from LTI will respond to those that relate to their programs. Can we start from my extreme left and go back?
Thank you. Chairperson. Perhaps let me start my response to the question by also acknowledging the other view that was expressed by Ruth all this morning. And I think it is useful if the analysis also comes from somebody outside the department in a way expressing exactly the same things that we've been trying to say as a department, but expressing them differently, because it does help to elucidate what we may be seen to be trying to cover up and make excuses for ourselves. But I think I was grateful that she made the comment that she made. But also of significance, Chair, is the last first bullet on her conclusion, that the annual report shows a chronic mismatch between intended scale of the program and the actual resources, policies, and systems available. And when you talk about capacity and all these other things, that's exactly what Ms. Hall was elaborating. Chair, one of the issues around the 30% target, just on her comment, that is 44.3% of land that has been delivered. That is only referring to land delivered through the state-assisted programs, excluding private transactions that have happened. Now, there are many organizations that are involved in the program of land reform. In partnership with the state, some independently of the state, within the agribusiness community of South Africa. That includes your land bank. Those statistics are not included in the statistics that you are presenting here. The four major commercial banks that are assisting, and many other entities that are involved in land reform. You would wonder why these six figures are not included here. First of all, we are reflecting here on the budget, on the vote that is allocated to the department. But we have made several efforts in engaging, to engage these organizations, the Banking Association of South Africa, and the like, to say, guys, can you share with us? So that we have a total picture. yes, as government, this is what we have done, but what have you done on your side? Can you make this information available? We are struggling to get this information, but we have now, we're able, about 2 months ago, to get the minister to intervene, to speak to the chief executive of the Banking Association of South Africa, to request this information so that we have a holistic picture in terms of where we are headed. We are headed insofar as land delivery is concerned. Indeed, the what has been achieved in the period under review, 2006-07, is very much under target. We thought we're correct in that assessment, but again, we want to juxtapose that against the budget allocation that was given to the department. The vote that was allocated to the department for end position is 647 million rand, of which close to 100% of that was spent against the target of 3.1 million hectares. Obviously, what it says is that the allocation was just far less than what was targeted to be delivered. That is the reality of the situation, and that is the slide. That,
you know, all this question about actual statistics and scattered information, are you able to talk to the issue of the role of the due process in obtaining that information?
We can take that.
Because I suppose, I mean, that should be central point. The collective information and, you know, all the institutions. I think the information should be in-house.
Chairperson. Ideally, that should be the case. Indeed, all land transfers in the country go to the deep office. But unfortunately, the system of capturing information, as you may have heard, when the recommendation of the panel of experts on land foreign, on policy, on ownership of land by foreigners, the deed office does not distinguish and separate this information at the present moment. Regulation 18 of the deed office, section 2, does provide for this information, but it does not distinguish between the race. It just needs the name of the person, it needs the identity of the person. But it does not say this transaction is moving from a white person to a black person, it's moving from a white corporate company to a black-owned corporate entity at the present moment. That is not the case. Therefore, the recommendation of the panel of experts is saying we must develop policy or even amend Regulation 18 of the Deeds Office so that this information can be made available. But there's a further recommendation that says that there should be this process of disclosure, particularly with transactions that have already happened. Historically, before, from 1994 up to date, that information can be only obtained if that disclosure has been. Because up to now, that is not how the information has been captured. Hence, we are not able to show the committee with certainty what transfers have happened. The issue of the report here showing land that has been acquired but does not reflect the households of beneficiaries. Those are the cases where we've acquired land in terms of priorities and acquisition, where the state has acquired the land and then subsequently identified the leases. The process of finalizing beneficiaries follows thereafter. And at the time of the compilation of this report, those beneficiaries have not been identified because we are providing for a period of 3 years to say we'll identify beneficiaries, give them a run while they are over a period of 3 years to prove themselves if they can farm. And subsequent to that, then we can transfer the land to them. I'm not sure, I'm hoping we'll get the specific details of the cases of errant projects where we've acquired land but we've got no beneficiaries. I don't think that is possible, but I would welcome the details from Ruth. insofar as that. With regard to the post and summit process, it is correct that that process has come to a halt because of difficulties in the relationship between the department and various organizations that are involved in that particular process. What has subsequently happened, though, is that we have made a recommendation that the Department of Land Affairs and the Department of Agriculture, together with civil society, organized agriculture, we establish a new forum that is going to be taking this process forward, including other stakeholders, because again, the post-and summit process did not include all the affected parties. We have read organizations that are complaining that are saying they have been left out of the process. So that is the process, that is the structure that we have agreed to. We have presented it to the DGs and to the minister. That be the process that we put in place to take those particular processes forward. We'll be happy even to respond to Mr. Nali's question, to Honorable Nali, who says none of the land summit recommendations have been implemented. We're happy to provide this committee with a written report showing those recommendations of the land summit that have been implemented, namely the proactive land acquisition strategy. With regard to EFSA and the Labor Tenant Act, there are questions both from Ms. Ruthold's presentation and from the honorable members with regard to EFSA. One is that EFSA is not being fully implemented. The other one is saying, is EFSA effective? This one is a very tricky one. Chairperson, we have reported in the past that we have considered, we have been doing a review of EFSA and LTA. We have engaged services of people that have been implementing in private practice this piece of legislation contracted by the department. One of the outcomes of these reviews is that the legislation, if fully implemented, could go a long way in terms of curbing the addiction. The one limitation with regard to both pieces of legislation is that they are regulatory, they are not, instead of being prescriptive in terms of the rights they convey to farm dwellers and labor tenants. And there is one area that needs to be looked at in terms of changing the legislation from being procedural but making it from being regulatory but making it more prescriptive. With regard to the I think the chief will respond to the political direction with regard to the future farm dwellers, because again, there is a position that has been taken by government in this regard with regard to the land and agrarian reform program, what we want to do in relation to that. I won't respond to that one. It's unfortunate that Honorable Abraham is not here. I do again want to say, Honorable Chair, that the correspondence Honorable Abraham referred to Rich, I don't think any one of us that are here saw the letter that he referred to way back in 2005. But the one that he personally gave to myself, I want to report that the department has been in contact with the people that Honorable Abraham referred to. And in one case, the department is in the process of acquiring the land in assisting the person that Honorable Abraham referred us to. Again, there was a question in page 72 that was raised by Honorable Abraham with relation to the land that has been acquired in the Free State where we are showing zeros. Again, that is where we have acquired land in terms of productive land acquisition. Hence, you see those zeros. There was also the issue that was raised by Honorable Abraham, but also Honorable Bipri, with regard to the capacity of municipalities to get involved in land reform and integration of land reform. What we are saying is that there is a regulatory framework in this country which compels every government department to have to provide hands-on support to municipalities, recognizing the limitation of those needs. If you want to decentralize land reform delivery, municipalities become the obvious platform for delivery. From the department's point of view, we have developed what Ms. Hall again refers to as the land reform area-based plan, which is a tool of integrating land reform into your IDPs that will assist us to be able to differentiate between different land reform needs at the local level. People want land for farming, people want land for housing, people want land for development. In this regard, Chair, the department has set aside an amount of 26 million rand to buy the necessary skills and capacity that must be placed at the local level. But also, we have secured 1.6 million rand from the Austrian Development Agency, partly to assist us in that particular process. There is donor funding also that has been made available, which we are negotiating with the Belgians and the DFID UK to the tune of about 50 million rand. Part of that money is going towards buying the skills and the capacity that is necessary that will be located at the local level to address specifically those needs. I think the issue of the land that has been offered in the market and the failure of the department to acquire this land. And I think, again, we have to be honest with honorable members. It is true, there may be, and there is quite a lot of land that is in the market. But what we are saying is that precisely because of the issues of capacity, there is no way that we can buy every farm that becomes available in the market. Hence some of the delays. What we are, however, doing in this regard, other than trying to fill in these posts, we have spent quite a lot of time over the last 12 months trying to build public-private partnerships with various private sector organizations, with the agribusiness organizations, with commodity organizations. Some of these agreements are already beginning to come to fruition. In various provinces such as KwaZulu-Natal, in Limpopo, in Mpumalanga, and yesterday the chief was signing another agreement with one of the big agribusinesses that is going to be helping us with adding capacity in terms of identifying land, in terms of providing post-settlement support to land reform beneficiaries. We realize that we cannot on our own accomplish this task. So we do need a national partnership with organized agriculture, private sector, and civil society organizations to realize this objective. So indeed, we are involving commercial farmers, Honorable Nell. The issue of the business plan, we have acknowledged that the current system, many of the people that got contracted by the department to develop business plan for land reform projects, many of those business plans are not worth the people they are written on. Hence, we have changed our strategy to develop strategic partnerships with organizations that have got vested interest in agricultural production. Who, if we fail, if land reform projects fail, those organizations will not get their supplies to their mills, to their silos, and they cannot do any beneficiation. So they themselves have got vested interest to make sure that land reform beneficiaries fail. These are the agreements that we are negotiating so that they get involved from design, they get involved in the value chain, they get involved in the market, in transportation, and right up to the shop floor. That is what we are doing at the present moment. To move away from this consultants that are coming up with the so-called disastrous business plan. There was a question about evictions again. I think what we are referring to, I think Mamila responded in part to this particular question. I think that there has got also to be differentiation between evictions and other forms of land rights infringement. There are other things that happen to people other than being evicted, which constitute constructive evictions. When people get beaten up, when people get denied access to particular rights, those are infringement of the land rights and other constitutional rights of those people. Those things do happen. In some instances, people don't physically throw people off the street, but they make the living conditions of those people on the farm so unbearable that people have got to move and go elsewhere.
welcome, Minister. No, we did indicate that you'll join us after our cabinet has finished business, and that has been accepted. We're busy taking, in fact, the department is responding to questions and comments by members, and afterwards, we'll give you the opportunity to greet us as well. Yeah.
Chairperson, with regard, there is quite a number of questions. I hope the chief will fill in on some of them because of the time. There was a question in relation to the land with regard to the power of attorney. Yes, there is 500,000 hectares of land. That is, over 1 million hectares of land that is sitting in powers of attorney to various government departments throughout the country. The arrangement in terms of the power of attorney, the minister delegated her power to the MEC for the provinces of Department of Agriculture and the provinces to administer that land on behalf of the department. One of the responsibilities was that they would administer the land, connect the leases, and so on and so on. The question was asked by Honorable Bigby whether they have been regularly reporting. We have discussed this with the provinces. There has not been regular reporting, but we are trying to regularize this particular situation. With regard to the legal support, the chair raised the question of why are we just engaging an NGO? The Rural Legal Trust chair is working in association with a whole range of civil society organizations across the country, not just the Rural Legal Trust, who have foreign donor funding. And they specifically play a critical role in this particular area, both in terms of legal representation, but in assisting the department in the monitoring of the mission. But it does not mean that the department itself does not make money available for the same purpose. We do have attorneys in our database. We are also further increasing the number of attorneys in the database of the department, where we've got experienced attorneys that are working with us in this particular regard. We are creating a unit, a specialized land rights unit, as proposed by Ms. Hall. We are creating that unit with specialized unit of attorneys and mediators who will be assisting us in this particular area, both in terms of legal representation, in mediation, and in the monitoring of the issue. Thank you.
Join my colleagues in thanking the members for their questions, and also thanking CLAS for their very objective critique of our report and useful recommendations, which I think we will together begin to look at with a view really to finding solutions. The questions asked in relation to restitution were very few, which really gives me which really requires of me to respond briefly. The one question which I think relates to both restitution and other programs of the reform is the question that was asked on post-settlement. And without repeating what the acting DG said and alluded to on what the department is currently working on post-settlement, I just need to emphasize the point that with regard to restitution projects, as part of that bigger strategy, there is this document which will be circulated, which deals with an evidence-based strategy. Meaning that this strategy was developed from experiences on the ground by beneficiaries both of restitution and redistribution and beneficiary program. And the strategy's emphasis basically deals with the question that was asked about the kind of engagement that the department actually endeavors to have with the local municipalities. And the emphasis is in the empowerment of municipalities and local communities. The question asked around the two documents on TIGA, the 3,243 vis-a-vis the 5,000. On the departmental annual report, the 3,000 was the target, is the target which was set for the year under review. Looking at what is in general remaining as outstanding, which is the 5,000. The target in real terms, when we're looking at what can be achieved realistically, was set at that 3,000 as the number for that has been prioritized. However, 5,000 is what in total is remaining from 79,000 that was altogether lost. And the one change that we are referring to would be the residual, which is what in our own analysis would not have been settled by the end of next year, which is 2008, as per presidential directive. So and another question that was asked was what would be holding on the one change. And the reasons are the same reasons that the acting DG referred to, which include cases that would have been referred to court. Some of them are already in court, and some of those cases would be in court for more than a year, and it is outside the commission's control, to influence the pace of finalization on those issues of boundary disputes. Those are lengthy processes of determining what boundaries actually exist for which communities. We have issues of traditional leaders which relate to this very issue of boundaries, questions of land use and so forth. All those reasons that we have actually indicated in the annual report of the commission and once again in this annual report. The question that was asked with regard to the effectiveness of the media with regard to tracking down on untraceable payments. The direct answer is yes. That strategy is working. The media the media campaigns are indeed assisting the commission, because we have noted that after the advertisement of specific names and areas of people who cannot be traced in the media, we have noted a great improvement in claimants coming forth to the commission. However, this also yields unintended consequences, because when we advertise for people to come forward for to receive their awards and also to provide outstanding information, this also creates an impression that we would be, as a commission, looking at news links, and that is not the intention. But then administratively it also creates a burden of us having now to respond to people coming to the commission with the understanding that they could launch or they could engage us on new things. But overall, with those that are intended to be tracked down for whom claims have to be settled, that strategy is working. We are not only using the media, I think at regional level, we also publish this information at municipal level, and when we give briefings, reports to provincial portfolio committees, we also share this information, and we are receiving support generally in members and at that level trying to assist us in tracing. And this is where we actually provide information on the actual geographic location of these claimants that cannot be traced. I think that covers general all the restitution questions. Thanks. Thanks, Chair. I would also like to echo the same appreciation for the objective review by PLAS on the budget of the department. The slide that was presented there showed that there is a big discrepancy between our capital budget and our current budget. And indeed, the new structure that we are proposing is going to assist us in closing that gap in terms of the number of people that we should have on the ground to be able to help us with implementation. But also, at the same time, align this gap between the current budget and the capital budget. To respond to the issues that were raised, the donor funding of 469,000 that was paid back to the Danish embassy, the money was provided for training of land reform practitioners on the integration of environmental planning into land reform and land development projects. But the 469 was a balance that was supposed to be paid back as it related to this project that was finalized in 2506. And the department didn't have any plan really to utilize the 469,000. The questions raised by Honorable Member Dali around Section 38 of the PFMA on audit outcomes. He mentioned that these issues have been coming over and over again in the past years. I would just like to differ slightly, because if you compare even our previous year's report, we had a few issues reported as compared to this financial year. The qualification that we received was on asset management and the management of leases. We've never had a qualification on asset management. We had an emphasis of measure in 2045. In 2546, there were no issues. And this was because in the previous years, we were audited on the current acquisitions, not on the opening balances. The AG and National Treasury agreed in 2546 to say, now we are going to be audited from the date of inception. And we have always reported in our reports that the initial take-on had serious flaws, because we were taking over assets that were purchased years ago. And in most cases, we didn't have documents, source documents relating to those assets. And what we did then was to say, let us barcode these assets so that we know that we have these assets and we can be able to identify them. But in terms of linking order numbers and invoices and other information that was needed in the register, we needed the actual source documents for us to do that. And the following years, 03, 04, 04, 05, and 06, 07, we don't have challenges in terms of asset management. I think even the report of the auditor, the AG, says clearly that it is the opening balances that are problematic. We have since managed as a department to go back to our archives and retrieve all those documents. The adjustment that we did of the 60 million was basically because of the efforts that the department has put in place to make sure that we try and retrieve as much documents as we can, lay our hands on, and be able to identify those assets and separate them between those that are above 5,000 and those that are below 5,000 as required by National Treasury. And that is progressing well, even up to now, in terms of getting the asset register right. The other qualification was on the collection of revenue from leased land. And that has been a historic problem where we've had all these leases all over the provinces, and some of them date back to the eras of the homeland. It has been a mammoth task to really put some of these contracts in place, to renew some of these contracts, as we are required by National Treasury to put the market-related rentals when we lease out this land. As a department, we realized that this task was far bigger than us. And that is why we decided in the previous financial year to say, let us have a two-phase approach. The first approach was to say, let us take care of the land that is managed through our PLRO offices, because that one is under our control. And the project unfolded where we collected all the contracts, we provided a manual register of all the land that was leased and managed by our PNRO officer. And to that extent, we were able to even adjust our financial report and reflect the revenue that we are reflecting now, because we did the calculation of all the money that was supposed to be collected. We are not saying all is good and well, because some of those contracts have expired. But then there is a concerted effort from the department to renew a significant amount of all those contracts. Now, the project that is unfolding now, and as reported in the audit report, is that land leased through the power of attorney, we couldn't account for revenue, because we haven't started in putting together all the contracts and calculating and providing that register for land leased through the power of attorney. And that is the project that has unfolded now for us to be able to produce the same register that we did with land managed by the department. On the other hand, we have also started developing a system that will assist us in managing those data. The system was started in the previous financial year. The AG acknowledged the plans that were in place and the development that was going to unfold. The system is there. It's going through a user testing stage at this point. And we are hopeful that by the end of the year, we would have been able to capture all the leases that we have on a system where we can now be able to say we can generate statements, we can generate information electronically, as opposed to the manual systems that we are having in place. And even the bigger state land audit that is undertaken by the department currently is going to go a long way in assisting us to further identify if there is any other land out there that is leased that was supposed to be on our records. And therefore, we are saying we acknowledge the weaknesses that are still inherent in this process, but there is a lot of initiatives that have been taken by the department in trying to really do away with this problem. The question linked to that was, where is the money collected through the power of attorney? We haven't started collecting that money. Yes, it is paid into the provincial revenue, and with this process that has unfolded now, where we are linking with all the provincial departments of agriculture and their chief financial officers to start putting in systems of reporting and making sure that whatever revenue they collect is paid back into the department, that is ongoing. And we are very positive that by the end of the year, we should be able to produce also the same report saying how much is kept by the provincial officers. Currently, we cannot tell because we don't have that full database of all the leases that are managed through the power of attorney. The fraud prevention and anti-corruption strategy, the report says that is partially approved. This part of the output included the risk management that was also undertaken by the department. There is a risk management committee that was established that was working on putting this strategy together. The fraud prevention was rolled out to all the offices. The reason why it's partially approved is because it's linked to the whole bigger picture of risk assessment in the department. And because of capacity constraints in that section, the head of section left the department early this year, yes, in January. And we couldn't finalize that whole strategy. And that is why it's not, we are saying it's partially approved. There is another element of it which has to be finalized.
I'm trying to deal with the staffing question.
Thank you, Chair, Minister, Honourable Members. In terms of the staffing issues, the comment by Dr. Hall in terms of the DLA is a small department with an ambitious mandate, that comment is actually quite correct. The number of people that DLA employs has never been aligned with the mandate of the department. And the main report focused on the structure for the department that has been finalized and is in the final processes of obtaining approval. Now, maybe just to give you a short background on that structure, the structure was firstly done by means of business process re-engineering, where each and every process in the department has been mapped, re-engineered to make sure that it's effective And once that was done, the volumes in terms of the different activities in each of those processes were calculated to determine how many staff members are actually required to perform those processes within the required period of time. The end result of that process is an establishment for the department that is almost doubling in size. And once the final approval for the structure has been obtained and the budget for that secured, the department will start filling those additional vacancies over a period of approximately 5 years. So the change is going to be focusing mainly on the areas of land reform, where additional capacity at the phase of delivery in districts is to be very largely increased, and that will make sure that we actually deal with a number of issues that have been raised this morning. In terms of the recruitment, during last year, November, in line with the Minister's program of Kajima, the department has started a recruitment project, which we've redesigned the recruitment project to take, where normally it took between 4 to 6 months, it is now cut down to approximately 43 days. And that recruitment process, where through last financial year we've been able to recruit 850 people through the whole year. In the first 6 months of this current year, we've already recruited 800 people. So we have been able to almost double our delivery in terms of the recruitment process. And we started at the higher levels, for example, at the deputy director level, so that if we recruit from within the department, it means then that in the next phase we come to the lower level. So we are gradually moving from the higher level through to the lower level. And that will ensure that by the end of this financial year, we are targeting a 10% vacancy rate in the department, which is more or less the normal vacancy rate that we find in public service organizations. We must admit that the target of 10% is a very steep target, but we have redeployed a very large team working on this project. We are monitoring them on a monthly basis to make sure that they are not failing us on achieving this specific target. In terms of the comments and the questions regarding staff turnover, we report in the annual report that our staff turnover at present is 12.6%. In other words, out of the total establishment, we have lost on average 12.6%. If we analyze that staff turnaround figure a bit in more detail, then we note that 50% of the 12.6% are actually promotions to other departments, which is the number of 199 that we report as transfers. And in fact, those transfers are not transfers at the equal level. It is actually transfers at a higher level, in other words, promotions to other government departments, which is a critical issue for us in the public service in the HR arena at the moment, where we are struggling to retain staff due to the high number of vacancies in virtually all the departments. There's a competition for a very small pool of skills. And especially in land reform and restitution, we don't find that skill in private sector organizations outside. So if we recruit there's actually not ready-made people out there, which means that it places an emphasis on us in terms of our training and development programs to bring in new staff without the experience, and we need to train and develop them. While at the same time, we do find that, especially at local municipal level, where things around land reform is now beginning to pick up speed, obviously when they recruit for land reform specialists, where do they come to? They come to land affairs. And then we also have identified that that is a big source of loss of staff to the outside. In terms of the questions related to bursaries and the graduate project, yes, we do tie bursary holders and graduates to the department contractually. In the case of the graduate project, they are contractually bound for a four-year period. In the case of bursary holders, the contractual period is depending on how long they study. So if it's a three-year degree, they are contractually bound for a three-year period. So we have put all the measures in place to make sure that the people that we develop and train do not actually leave us before we receive value from the investment that we've made in them. So the graduate project, which is aiming at bringing on board 450 graduates in DLA, if we look at the vacancy level of around 1,000, it will mean that it is a significant reduction of that vacancy level at the lower level in the DLA once we have successfully delivered on that project. So that is also why we are convinced that we are going to reduce our staffing vacancy level to below 10%. The last area that I just want to briefly concentrate on is the organizational culture in DLA, where quite rightly the comment has been made by the chair that when people leave, there's a reason for them leaving. And that perhaps one of those reasons is that the organizational culture in the department is not a positive one. I think the key area that we identify in determining why people are leaving, we do conduct exit interviews and we do make sure that we understand why people are leaving. And one of the main reasons why people are leaving is actually pressure at work. Where in, for example, restitution and land reform, it's a very high-pressured environment where work often is done 7 days a week and it's long hours with weekend work when communities are available to interact with the department. So those are some of the issues that we hope that we can address once we have more capacity on board, to actually reduce the pressure in the working environment so that we have more people that can actually provide a better service to our clients. Chair, I lastly want to say that we do have a self-retention policy in place, which is being monitored, which do ensure that there is some comfort provided in the work environment to staff, that we can make them comfortable in the work environment and as such provide the attractive work environment. Thank you.
I'll ask Derek, Dr. Derek Clark to respond for all the LPI questions.
Yeah, I think let's be a little bit swift. The minute is right time. I'll be quick. Honorable members, the question around the higher vacancy rate and special planning.
All members, can we take the minister then proceed with the, or to conclude on this question?
Go here.
Okay, listen to you. Thank you. The special planning group is a scarce skill profession like some of the other scarce skill professions of land surveying, and the department is struggling to recruit these people, mainly because of the requirements for employment equity, and we find very few of the designated people in the professional group. The very uncompetitive conditions of service that are offered, even in comparison to local municipalities, that we can offer these people. So it's very difficult for us to recruit these professional groups. But it must be remembered that with respect to special planning, the department is only responsible for policy and establishing special planning frameworks. So we don't actually undertake the special planning itself. That is all an area-based plan. So those are put out for special planners to actually prepare those plans. On the question of the 2-year delay in deeds registration, we're not aware of any such delays for deeds registration. Generally, the deeds officers are registering deeds within a matter of a few weeks. There are some officers that have not met the targets, but then they've only slipped by a few days and definitely not 2 years. There are some other processes once the deed is registered, such as preparing material for archive. And some officers have had delays of maybe 3 to 6 months. So I'm not too sure where the 2-year delay is coming from. It could be possible that this is part of the conveyancing processes which precedes the deeds office. I think that was the question.
Okay. Let me just summarize and fill the gaps where they have not covered this. I'll be the first one to admit that the performance of the department is far below the target that have been set. I think the report does state that. So I would accept the objective comment that says our performance is less than what is has been targeted. The issues of the CLARA regulations where we are and the LAM, I must say that we have done the very final draft of that CLARA regulation. The SONA, State of the Nation Address, said we must implement CLARA. And we realize that we may not be able to implement that CLARA and roll out without the CLARA regulations. Those regulations, we are, I think it must be the 7th or 8th draft, which has been circulated, and at this stage, at our last management meeting, we asked the deputy minister together with the captain to finalize the very last version, which will then be sent to both cabinet and to yourself for public comment. So it should be available next week, I think, because the team is meeting this Friday, to look at the, as I say, the MTS draft of those travel regulations. And then on the LAM, it's the same response. The team is meeting for also the LAM. The LAM has been referred for comments to many, because the instruction was that it must be referred to the cluster, social and economic clusters for comments, which was done. They gave us the comments. It was very much to refer to the DPLG, because it will be a related department, especially for the municipalities, etc., to have referred to them. And they've given the comments, and those comments have been incorporated. So, again, LAM is also being finalized in this chapter, including the Deputy Minister on Friday. So we should be able to get the final documents that will be sent to cabinet and for public comment by next week. On the issue of post-government support, I think my colleagues have responded to this. As I indicated, we will circulate one of the the initiatives that have come from all those discussions with the consultation on what needs to inform the post-government report. Clearly, to respond to the question on our relations with the Department of Agriculture.
I think we've got an issue of time. So what we'll do, let me take the minute. After which, I will give you the opportunity to respond to remarks.
For land affairs that arose from committee meetings. I met with the president on the 24th of October. We discussed with him the state of the Department of Land Affairs and agreed with him that we terminate the DG contract, the DG for Land Affairs contract with BNHFF. I then met with the DG together with the Deputy Minister on the 29th of October, and I informed him that we have met and discussed with the President and have arrived at the decision that we terminate his contract with the immediate effect. He accepted the decision, and after discussing with the Deputy Minister, we agreed that Mr. Tosi Gwanya, who is most senior in the department at the moment, be appointed as acting DG, and on the 30th of October, that was last Tuesday, I reported back to the President that we have informed the DG of our decision to terminate his contract with immediate effect and have appointed Mr. Tosi Gwanya as the acting DG for the Department of Land Affairs. The post of the DG for Land Affairs is being advertised at the moment. I also, as chair and the committee, I'm alarmed. I would like to give a report of the cabinet discussion and decision around the forensic audit into the financial management of the land and agricultural development bank of South Africa. Cabinet met last week to discuss and study the report of the forensic audit by Deloitte and Touche on the financial management of the land bank. Cabinet approved the report on the forensic audit of the financial management of the land bank. Secondly, Cabinet approved one, that the report be referred to the South African Police Services, SAP, and that the National Directorate of Public Prosecution for also refer to them for further investigation, and that criminal proceedings, civil action, and disciplinary action be instituted against the individuals found to be culpable. Number two, that the Department of Agriculture and the National Treasury cooperate closely in the process of turning around the land bank. Number three, that the shareholder of the bank, the Minister of Agriculture and Land Affairs, maintains government oversight over the bank in order to stabilize the bank and provide guidance during the restructuring process. Four, that the bank submits a turnaround strategy to the Minister and the Minister of Finance by the 30th of November 2007. Five, that the Minister of Agriculture and Land Affairs, in consultation with the Minister of Finance, initiate a process to appoint a new Chief Executive Officer of the bank and to review the composition of the board of the land bank. Six, that the bank takes appropriate action to address any issues emanating from the report in directing and controlling its operations and businesses. Seven, that the Minister of Agriculture and Land Affairs ensure that appropriate action as informed by the forensic audit report into the financial management of the bank is taken with immediate effect. Further, that possible remedies for recovering undue benefits derived by third parties as a result of the actions of the land bank management be investigated. Lastly, that internal disciplinary measures be taken against members who fail to act within the confines of their duty. Thank you.
Thank you, Minister, for the briefing on the two issues. And I'm sure with regard to the issue of the DG, we can have a conversation around it. And we also did the discussion. And thanks for having this committee around that. And that also includes the issue of the land bank. In fact, the cabinet that approved had a preview of our deliberation this time around the forensic audit. Of course, it was also our position that we need to tread carefully around this as a portfolio committee, because there are matters bigger that we need to be investigated. So therefore, we on behalf of the portfolio committee accept the decision of the cabinet. Thanks for the briefing, Minister. You can count on the portfolio committee for support in dealing with challenges that the department and the land bank have faced. Thank you very much.
I think that while these are critical issues that need to be attended to,
They need to be attended to within a clear framework. And that framework, as I was suggesting, was on the one hand clear political direction on what is the process of land reform to achieve, what is the outcome to be in terms of agrarian reform and specifically the future of farm dwellers. The second point was the emphasis on the need for a consolidated new policy direction rather than these somewhat ad hoc initiatives around bits of policy here and there. So what's needed is a broad clarity on how these different policy initiatives hang together and whether they're coherent. And the third point that I would make, and this is particularly for the committee because of the enormous task of oversight in this area, is to clarify for the department what kind of detail of reporting would be required in the future. And I think that while this is a thick document, there are many unanswered questions in here. And so perhaps if we talk about the M&E function more in the future, we can specify what further detail would be needed so that you can better evaluate the performance of this hub. I'd like to say again, thank you for the opportunity to be here and to talk to you, and good luck with your deliberations.
Thank you very much, and I'm sure the committee would want to engage further on that material too. But you are making a much. Thanks for your contributions, and thanks, FGDG. You know, I think I can vouch for the FGDG that the best and the most effective way of, if members have got complaints and so on, to communicate with the department, it's actually easier. I found that mechanism much more productive. The other people at the law level may not have a sense of what parliament is and all of that. Let's engage with the leadership.
Okay.
Lunch is available on 2nd floor.